I think as the education, we are faced with a huge crisis of discipline in our school. The things that we have seen, the last incident that has just happened in Gauteng, that has just gone viral, even on the social media, even on media, something to be concerned about. Maybe it's one thing that we still need to sit as a committee and say, choose to, and together with you to be here to say, what has gone wrong? What is it that is happening? That incident, for that learner was hitting a teacher with an idea. Of which is not the first time that you see such a thing, but really, I think now the way people have taken it up to the media and so forth, it says there's a lot that needs to be done within our department. There's a lot that is going wrong. What is happening, you know? But we are hopeful that the housing department then is going to be handling that case well. We are going to see that case being taken up well and see what is it that will come out of it. But really, that is a worrisome factor. We are always saying schools, when we talk of schools as places of safety, we even included the teachers there. So really, to see that thing happening, it is scary. It shows that our schools are very much open up to anything that may come and happen to the teachers and to the learners themselves. But as I'm saying, maybe it's a topic that we need to get in next other time. We'll be starting with... Oh, honourable members, we know last week we postponed the second and third quarterly report. But due to the scheduled meeting for today with the office of the AG, we couldn't move this one, so we've shifted the second and third quarterly report to next Tuesday because we know the schedule that the AG is working with, so we needed to take this one today, then shifted what was supposed to be shifted to that other time. But also, I've noted you, Honourable Hollis. Let us also remember our meeting that's taking place with our entities on Friday. Honourable Collins.
Thanks, Chair. I'm a bit concerned about this meeting on Friday. Actually, also a bit concerned about the numbers today or down of committee members. But you know, there's the funeral in the Eastern Cape. I know already that my two colleagues have submitted apologies for Friday. I don't know whether it's reached the office yet, but they are not available on Friday. And I'm wondering if colleagues from other parties are going to fly down to the funeral, in which case, Chair, it might be you and I on our own here on Friday, which might be a little bit awkward. Perhaps we should just consult as to who's going to be here on Friday. We may need to reschedule.
I'm covered. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Honourable Ollie, for raising that. I've been talking with Mr. Brown even now. He has indicated that, like Honourable Boshoff and others, we are going to be rounding up the members today so that we make that decision today, because if the number of members are not here, then affecting even worse our program, because now we have been having two items behind, but we can't do anything if ever they're not around here. We know there is this funeral of Honourable Lolly, where so many members are going to that funeral. So Mr. Brown will be working on that today, and the final decision after I share ground with all the members will make that decision today so that we can even inform the entities that are to come. Then again, that will mean, Mr. Brown, we are shifting everything, we take the entities on Tuesday, you know, we will see how we do it. Thank you for raising that.
Thank you.
Office of the AG, APSA, thank you very much. We always appreciate our discussions with you. And before you even start, this year we had a very interesting session with all the problems, because we were looking specifically on the targets, on the audit outcomes, the comments that you come up with, I know as we are seated here as members, we are going to be sharing with you what we learned from them, as to say, when we look at your audit outcomes, the remarks, the findings that you come up with, sometimes even the misunderstandings that you have from your side and what is implementable from their side as provinces and so forth. So it was a very interesting discussion that is going to assist us even as members of this committee when we engage with you moving forward, and also getting to the presentation that is going to be done by the department on the action plan coming from the findings that we have come up with, and also looking at the target on June 4th. So it was a very interesting discussion that we had. But we are happy that you are here. You are going to be sharing with us to see what it is that we are looking at for 2018-19, the MLB APP for the Department of Basic Education. Then after that, we are going to be taking the Department of Basic Education. Deputy Minister, I'm not sure whether you want to have your word now or after the AG when we get into EDBE, but because we are here, we are happy, we always appreciate your presence. We are here to look at the briefing by AFSA, even on your draft annual performance plan. I know you can have words just to open up before we hand over to us.
Just very briefly, thank you very much, Chairperson, and it's always a pleasure to be here, and thanks to the AG's officers. Just to assure you that we work very closely and interactively with the AG's officers, because unless there's that collaboration, we won't be able to advance and promote the objectives and outcomes that we seek to achieve. But the main reason for my intervention is twofold, Chair. Very briefly, firstly, the Minister was going to be here. She has a medical appointment, and I would like to convey personally apologies. So as of yesterday, she was going to be here, and please accept her apologies. She's just returned from abroad, so I imagine that the journey itself might have had something to do with her state of health. The second is the concern that you've raised, and it's a matter that I've already spoken to the NEC about, and he's dealing with the matter very, very swiftly. But I think it requires a broader discussion. Although in a lighter vein, they say that we don't set a very good standard as members of Parliament when we disrespect authority and we behave as if there's no dignity in Parliament. So if that kind of message goes on to the youth, then we must, as public representatives, take partial responsibility for it, because if it's okay for MPs to behave in a particular way, what about the children? Yeah, thank you. And if you're looking for your phone, this doesn't detract from our responsibility to ensure that we have discipline in our classrooms, and certainly requires a conversation. And I think, Chair, if at all we could take advantage of the fact that the elections are taking place as we speak now of school governing bodies, and it should be part and parcel of the induction of every school governing body, the issue of discipline that you've raised, so that we can basically assist and train and induct members of the governing body in terms of discipline and what our expectations are in this regard, so that it becomes a universal thing. The induction programs are going to start next year. And what we can share with you is, for example, the issue of sexual... This year. So what I'm saying to you, the elections are taking place now as we speak in this month. We have an induction program in the next month. And what we could do is universally ensure that we develop a strategy for all governing bodies that are going to be inducted. I think that would be very, very useful, because they play a particularly important role in the interface between schools and the communities. And we've already started some initiatives there with regard to sexuality education, for example, and drug and alcohol abuse. So that there is going to take place universally with the training of governing bodies. And I think this is an important element to include, so that they receive some kind of training. But I absolutely no doubt that what you're suggesting is correct, that it requires a dedicated discussion amongst all members rather than using today as a platform. So those are just my remarks, Chairperson, and I certainly would respond after we receive the presentation. Thank you.
Everyone, pardon me with this one. You, Jimmy. I already call you, relate to you on your first name. That is why now I feel a little bit. Yeah. Can then hand over to you, Aksa, to lead us on this briefing, where we are always saying, and we are always talking to the department, as to say, when we look at the APP and their targets, that alignment, of which I know we are also always looking at, of their APPs to the MCSF, to the MDP, let us say it, and it's one thing as portfolio committees, but we are very much interested in, and the usefulness and the measurability of their targets, what is it that is happening. So we're very eager to hear from you, as to say, from your own perspective on the office of the AG, what is it that you're going to say to us about this draft MDP that is going to be coming. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Yes, welcome, colleagues, and thank you very much for having me to present the presentation. So what we do within the AG's office, we look at the draft annual performance plan of the following year, 18-19, while it's still in draft, so we can give some recommendations to management as to ensure that the APP is, first of all, relevant and it's measurable. So I will go through the presentation and then I'll explain as to what we have identified. What we've also done is we've not only looked at basic education at national, we've also looked at provincial, and to see whether or not the provinces are actually aligned to the MTSF. So that will also be discussing in the presentation. move on to the next slide. We've got a reputation promise, and one of our key things within our reputation promise is to help this committee enable oversight and accountability, and then also to strengthen governance. So as part of our level of assurance, we try and ensure improved governance from our side to the committee, so that the committee can be more informed when they actually review the annual performance plan of the department. Go to slide number 4. You'll see what we mentioned here is to say exactly as I mentioned before. We look at the 18-19 annual performance plan for the department, and then we communicate any of our findings that we had with the department, and then also we present it at the committee as today. Within the Auditor General, we look at four different areas of scope when we review an annual performance plan. We look at measurability, whether or not your targets are actually measurable. We look at relevance, whether or not your targets or your indicators and your objectives are actually relevant to the department's mandate. And then we look at consistency between your strategic plan and your APP and in your annual performance report. So from the, there should be a correlation. And then we look at presentation in terms of national treasury requirements. For this review that we did not look at consistency and we did not look at presentation. And the reason for that is because we're looking at the plan and we're not looking at the report as yet. When we look at the report, on 31st of May, when the department submits the actual report, then we will also be looking at presentation and consistency as to ensure that report is actually consistent to the APP, just to make sure that the department is actually reporting on all their set targets and objectives as defined in the annual performance plan and as what was approved by the minister. So then I'll move to slide number 5, just for noting. Any findings that we have identified or any recommendations that we made on the 18-19 annual performance plan, we will report in the management report, but it will not affect the audit report of the department for 17-18. Purely because of the fact that we're actually looking at the specific plan, which is still in draft format, and that we are actually then, if we look at the actual report, of our audit report for financial year 17-18, we'll be looking at the annual performance report for 17-18 and not the annual performance plan for 18-19. So this is just a value-adding initiative that we do from the AG's office to to help the departments and entities to ensure that their plans are more in line with the criteria. It should further be noted that we have reviewed the APP for 18-19. We have issued our comments to management. Management have received them, and they are busy correcting it. We've not yet received the final annual performance plan from the department to see whether or not everything has been incorporated. That we will do as soon as we receive it to confirm that management has taken our comments into consideration. Mm-hmm. But management has accepted our comments, and we are working closely with them to ensure that we comply with the criteria. We move on to slide number 7. So this is the background and application of the legislation that we use. We look at the National Development Plan. From the National Development Plan stems your MTSF targets, and we look at period 2014 to 2019. And then there are also two frameworks issued by National Treasury that we review, and that forms the basis for our criteria that we use. The first framework is that was issued by the National Treasury. It's a framework for managing of program performance information. That sets out your measurability criteria in terms of SMART criteria. If we talk about SMART criteria, whether or not an indicator is actually specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. So your indicators and targets need to comply with all of those criteria to ensure that what you're actually stating in your APP can actually be measurable. We also then look at the framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans as issued by National Treasury. And then we also look at National Treasury Instruction Note 33, which is also applicable to departments, but it's mainly for entities in ensuring that they comply with the strategic framework. So like I mentioned earlier, the next slide, 2.1, this is the criteria that we use. So for a performance indicator should be well-defined, verifiable, and relevant. And these are all the things that we look at for a specific indicator, the criteria that we look at. And then we also look at the SMART criteria, as I mentioned earlier, in slide number 9, and there we have the specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. And those are the criteria we look at when we actually review the annual performance plan of the department. I'm going to move on to the findings that we've identified for the review of the 2018-19 APP, and that will be slide 11. So this is for national. So for national basic education, what we looked at the 5 programs within national basic education, and then within the 5 programs we identified a couple of matters. So this is just a summary. I'll get to the next slide. We'll go with more detail. But as you can see on program 2, we identified 6 usefulness matters that we brought to the attention of the department. In program 3, we identified 1, and program 4, we identified 3 matters. So as you can see, program 1, the administrative program, usually we don't spend too much time on the administrative program because we feel it's just in terms of the operations of the department, and that's not the actual mandate of the department. We spend more time specifically within education, looking at program 2, 3, 4, and 5. Okay, so what we identified in this 18-19 APP. So we looked at the APP and we identified a couple of similar instances across the programs. And what I highlighted in red there was that in terms of the framework for strategic planning, if you have a percentage as an indicator, a percentage achievement, you need to also then specify what is the actual nominator and denominator that actually arrives at the percentage, because how do you know actually what's the population that is going to be used to actually arrive at the percentage? So that is what is very important for us. So when we looked at the original APP, that was not there for a couple of the targets. Management have taken note of that, and they are busy correcting that from their side. So it just increases the measurability of the actual indicator and target. Another thing we identified on bullet number 2, we also identified that the department receives a DORA grant for HIV and AIDS and life skills education. We could not identify any target on the APP relating to the specific DORA grant. So if you look in terms of completeness from what the department is spending money on, we could not find a specific target in the APP relating to the specific DORA grant. So we have brought it to attention to the department, and they are looking at this specifically. And as you know, the DORA grant has got its own specific regulations, and legislation needs to comply with in order to be transferred and also to ensure that it is spent according to what was the original intention of the actual DORA grant. The third thing we looked at, we also identified that some of the indicators, we noted that some of the indicators are indicated as cumulative, but the targets are not listed as cumulative under the MTSF period. So therefore, it's recommended that the targets are cumulative per quarter are clearly indicated in the TID. So a TID is a technical indicator description. So with every target in the annual performance plan, you will also have a TID. A TID just sets out exactly as to what is the measurable criteria that will be used. So it will specify as to how this achievement will be calculated. It will set out exactly as to what the source information that should be accompanying the specific target or achievement, and we audit against that specific, because it sets out a bit more detail as to the objective exactly of the actual indicator. So from our review, this relates mainly to national. We did not identify a significant amount of issues. In general, the department's annual performance plan is usually well prepared in terms of usefulness, and it's similar to what we've identified last year. We had a few more things, and I think the biggest thing we identified last year was mainly the MTSF-related matters, which I will get to a bit later. One thing to note for us is just the percentages, as mentioned in the very first bullet. The department should take note of that, because that's become a bit impractical when we go and audit the actual information to determine a percentage if we don't know what is the nominator and denominator. So that is for us very important, and then it becomes sometimes difficult to verify the information. Move on to the next slide. The very first bullet talks about the fact that DBE, so you remember last year we presented to the portfolio committee the fact that lots of these MTSF targets were not included in the provinces. And then we discussed and raised the matter to say that national is also not, bringing it to the attention of the provinces at that specific point in time. So subsequent to our engagement last year, I think it was about 4 days later, the DG wrote a letter to the provinces instructing them to include the MTSF targets for the provinces also. So we've been following up on that from our side. And throughout the year, DBE have had quarterly meetings with the provinces to try and align the provinces' APPs to the actual MTSF targets to ensure that everybody is actually following the same MTSF targets. There's been some alignment, but not everything, and as mentioned in my slide a bit later, the provinces have still not included all of the MTSF targets as communicated by national DBE. So at the moment, there are meetings taking place between ourselves and the national office, and I'm also constantly in communication with my provincial auditors to ensure that they actually comply with these specific indicators. So as I mentioned in bullet number 2, the fact that the PEDs, as the provincial education departments, have started aligning the annual performance plan to the MTSF indicators, but not all indicators are included. Bullet number 3 talks about the fact that some of the MTSF 2014-19 indicators cannot be implemented by the PEDs, the Provincial Education Department, and that relates to specifically to the ANA. And the reason for the ANA is because of the fact that National have had some difficulty with the unions in implementing ANA, and therefore they are busy remodeling this specific assessment. And due to that, some of these targets are then actually not included in the provincial education department's APPs because they feel they can't deliver on something that national has not yet resolved. The very fourth bullet is the performance measures in the national performance plan, NPSF, that doesn't translate in performance indicators, resulting in poor alignment between the national and provincial education departments. So what we identified is also the fact that some of these performance measures in the national development plan are difficult to actually include into actual measurable targets. We have also highlighted that with the department. The department is busy working on the provinces to ensure that they actually develop proper PPMs. PPM is a program performance measure to be included for the provinces to ensure that they actually include these specific requirements from the NDP and MTSF in the APPs. Through review of our medium strategic framework, reference to outcome one, and we compared the MTSF to the second draft of the 2018-1983 and identified that the following indicators in the MTSF were not included. So what we did is we listed the specific indicators that the provinces, neither the province nor national, has included at all. That is included in MTSF, and that if you can see the period there, 2014-2019, is becoming concerned because we've only got 1 year left on this specific matter. So there's a list of all the indicators that have not been included. So if I start with the very first one, just as an example, percentage of schools with adequate infrastructure in line with agreed norms and standards. So for this specific indicator, it has not yet been included into any of the APPs, and it is quite material to the department's key service delivery. And as you know, the infrastructure is also one of the probably the biggest issues that, or the most concern that we raised within the departments and the sector-specific leadership. It's also part of our key message that we presented in the AG's general report this year that needs to be addressed. So if you go to the far right side of that specific slide, you'll see there's a comment that we just included there to say this indicator is not included in the APP, and it's also not included as a PPM, and a PPM meaning a program performance measure. And those program performance measures are critical to ensure that whatever they include on the APP is actually measurable and is actually relevant to the department. So those are the key things that we have identified. Some of the ANA, we've also included the ANA indicators that I've mentioned earlier that the department is busy remodeling, and that's the reason why it's not included. But we did want to just make a comprehensive list of all the MTSF indicators that are not included. Obviously, some of them relating to ANA, and that that National Basic Education is busy working on to ensure and busy remodeling that specific program. I'm not going to go through all the indicators. I will take some questions on the indicators when I'm done with the slides, if there are any. But you'll see we just made a list of them. Some of them are quite material to the Department Service Delivery in terms of their mandate. If I go to slide number 17, what we did here is we did an assessment of who actually has included everything and who has not for the MTSF. And at the moment, as you can see, from the 9 plus 1, 9 provinces plus national at the bottom, we will actually see that nobody has included any of the complete set of MTSF indicators in the APPs. So that is something for noting going forward. Then if I go to slide number, point number 4, just the informative slide that I also shared with the portfolio committee last year, is just in the way you approach the actual APP. I'm not going to go into that much of detail because the portfolio committee is aware of this. And then I'll take some questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Maybe if I can ask, why do we keep on talking of ANA when we know that we know that? Why is it still even among the findings, knowing very well that we have done? It's one thing that has been done away with. Because even if you look at all these comments, most of them are around ANA. Their need for
I think, Madam Chair, what we're doing is we're just making a comprehensive presentation because we look at everything in the MTSF requirements compared to everything that has been disclosed. So although we know, yes, year on year, we know about the issue, we're just making sure we're just reporting comprehensively. But if it's the committee's feeling, we can exclude that until the situation changes. I don't mind. But it's just for us just to make sure that we are talking about the complete set of MTSF indicators.
Thank you. honorable members. That was a nice presentation that we've just received. Can I open up for your comments? Honorable, always your hand is open. Honorable Ngoto, can I take? Or honorable Basson, can I take you? Honorable others.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the AG for the presentation. One of the difficulties that we have in looking at the statistics as a committee is that the AG is telling us that the ANA indicators cannot be implemented currently by the provincial education departments on page 13 because of the review process and all that. But then they tell us on slide 17 that none of the provinces nor the National Department have included all the indicators in their annual performance plans. Now those two facts affect each other and give us a difficult situation to deal with because we don't have the detail for any of this high-level summary. So if we take ANA out of the equation, we don't know whether on all the other indicators there is one or two provinces that have complied with all of the others, because we admit up front that we can't implement the ANA. So then what about all the other indicators? Now the high-level summary which you've given us doesn't draw down enough to enable us to know. So in terms of all the other indicators, are we making any progress or is it still, or are we getting nowhere? And then secondly, I understood from the ATC this morning that the final annual performance plan was tabled today. Or yesterday. Was it today? So it's been tabled today, yesterday. I don't have a copy yet. I haven't seen it, but it has now been tabled, which makes it a bit unfortunate because now I'd like to ask the department, now have you fixed all these things in the final one? And if he says yes and nods, I have no way of checking that because I don't have the report. So Mr. Whaley, I mean, he's a great guy, but he's also a good politician. You know, he can make it sound very good, but I don't have the document to check him, you know. He's a good politician, arguably the best politician in the room. So my problem is that it's now difficult as a committee member to now know where we are in the process because of the time of the documents dropping. We're now in an awkward position, secondly. And thirdly, then my obvious question is to the DG, why so many of these items, you know, some of these things, forget about the annas because I can't deal with that, but some of these other items are competency tests for principals. Have the principals signed performance agreements? Have you assessed, are there indicators to assess the competency of district managers? You know, these kind of percentages of schools with adequate infrastructure in line with agreed norms and standards. You know, we're 24 years into the new education department, and this report is saying not that we haven't done the work, it's saying we haven't even put the indicators into the target in the annual performance plan to decide how we're going to evaluate whether or not we've done the work. After 24 years, we still can't assess the infrastructure. That's quite sad. Now, I don't know if the subsequent to this presentation, those indicators, those important ones, assessing teachers, the quality of the infrastructure, assessing the district representatives, have now found their way into the final version, because, of course, it's been published, but I don't have it. So that would be my question, not to the Auditor General, but to the department. Has there been, you know, have those been lifted and put in, or we now can't do it because the unions are refusing, because that might be a problem. I mean, if the union says, no, we're not going to be assessed, and the department says, yes, you are, then usually a fight erupts, and then we have a long political drama in South Africa every time that happens. So are we in that space, or has it been put in? Those are my three questions. Thanks, Chair. So one to the department and two to the agent.
But just to get in on what we have raised on the issues of the APP, yes, they've been tabled yesterday. Today, as we have said, we are looking at what the AG's office have said and also at the action plan coming out from 2016, what has been raised by the AG's. And on the 27th, we'll have got enough time, we are within the time that Parliament has put for us to have gone through the APP, the final one.
So we have another question.
That is when it will be presented to us. Today is just an action plan on what has been raised in the premises. So we're still going to have that time. We have studied the APP, then we are going to engage fruitfully with the department. Honourable Bato.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, Ms. Goddard. Ms. Goddard, definitely by the end of today, electronically and hard copy, you will have sent to each and every member. Hence, even the meeting that you're postponing on Friday, it's where the two entities were going to look at their, we were going to look at the APP, so it will be postponed to get more time to engage with their
interests
and something. Honourable Ms. Goddard.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, AG, for the report. Good morning, everybody. I just wanted to check, Chairperson, maybe before I ask my questions, just to reflect that, you know, some of the issues that we have identified as a committee, we have really already identified and have raised them with the department in many of the meetings as points of concern. I'm sure you would recall even in the previous years, the issue of data and information and targets has been a recurring point. And Chairperson, that leads me to my question on the issue of language, the language used in the report, because I would agree with you when you talk about the target, the percentages not being able to give you a clear value, like in terms of the cumulative, you know, the target should be, you know, achieving targets should be a cumulative effort throughout the whole year. But I just wanted to check, because in certain instances, when you go through this, the recommendations that you have put forward, the list of indicators that seems to be not captured, some of the indicators that are listed there, you find them in the APP. They are there. You find them. Like the issue of infrastructure cuts across. But the other question that comes to mind is assessing the department, is it going to be wholly on the issue of infrastructure or on its core function? Because the core function of basic education is education and, you know, learning and teaching. So I just wanted to check whether that at times it's been taken into consideration as a minor responsibility for the department. And my view is that we should look at the core rather than the peripheral functions that the department should be playing. And then the other issue is the issue of concurrence. We have had a session called by this portfolio committee where we were trying to deal with that matter. And I don't know how you expect the GBE to really respond to the issue, which is entirely beyond their, you know, their reach. The issue of concurrence of function. I know that you might raise the fact that in terms of policy, they can give direction, but in this instance, how do you foresee that happening? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Amendment Justice, and thank you to the presenter for the presentation. And Chairperson, I have only one or two questions. On slide 5, the last comment, it should be noted that there are still, we are still waiting for the final APP to confirm that the confirmed corrections have been corrected. Do you have a time frame for submitting the corrections with the Department of Education? Do you have a time frame for that? And on slide 11, yeah, where the provincial, I mean programs, where you have some certain findings on programs 2, 3, and 4. I would like to know if the Department of Education agreed with the proposed amendments that you have made on all these findings that we have found it. And, okay, I will ask what steps has the department so far taken to address your findings? And from these findings, do you have findings that you feel that are repeating themselves year by year, or those are the new findings? On slide 17, where there are so many exits on all the provinces, I would like to know that as it's AGF, your findings are that not all have been included. Yeah, it is the province's findings. The auditors are saying not all are included in the provincial they have not all included their indicators. Yeah. So I would like to know what support do you give the provinces in order to understand what they are supposed to do and how to do it. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. And just checking,
Honorable Shop, are
you
here? No, I'm fine, thank you.
Okay.
I knew I'd be covered by everybody.
Okay, no, thanks. Agent Office, I know with the questions that you are raising, because I also have some, but I know that some of them or most of them will be covered by EDBE as they get in with the presentation as to see how have they attended to all the functions. I'm happy because you'll still be part of our meetings, because for me, I will even reserve some of the questions as to say, after we have heard the department coming in with how they have responded, of which is preparing us even more for the APP to come, because these are the things that we must be checking in or checking on as to say what is it that they have done now for 2018-19. I think that will afford. Let me give you this opportunity to respond so that you give to DBE, then we'll take the whole discussion again after they've come up with their own presentation and the briefing on their update.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for all the members for all the questions. I wrote down the questions. I'm going to answer all the questions. If I miss any question, please let me know. But I'm going to start from the beginning. So the very first question was, if you have to remove the ANA, what would this picture be like on slide number 17? So basically, ANA relates mainly to DBE. And if you have to remove ANA, then DBE would have implemented what they are required to implement at national level. Where it states on this slide, the indicator is not included in APP 1819 and also not included as a PPM. That's mainly relating to the province. Those are usually the actual implementation of the actual program where DBE is not the custodian. DBE is just responsible for transferring either the transfer payment to the province, but the actual implementation is actually the province. And that's why it's important for the province to actually have these indicators in the APPs. So this is a combination of provincial and DBE not including indicators, but the ones relating to ANA is mostly basic education. So that picture will change. Slide 17 will change, but still all nine provinces have still not included all the APP, all the indicators, so they are still short in terms of APSF indicators. So I mentioned that. Then, another question by one of the members were, why are we looking at infrastructure when infrastructure is not necessarily the core function of basic education? I think what needs to be noted is the fact that, yes, we agree and we have meetings with the department specifically on infrastructure quite often, and we get reminded quite often that they are not engineers and they don't build the schools. But the problem is they do receive a 10 billion plus grant. So therefore, for us it's material, and therefore it's material for the department to actually report on specific indicators relating to the infrastructure for the building of infrastructure. Because without a school, you cannot teach. So that is something we do focus on as part of our value chain initiatives that we do look at. And if you look at the full value chain scope, and we've implemented it at basic education, is that the very first thing that you need is a physical asset or an infrastructure asset, and that will be your school, in order for you to actually provide training. So although we know that technically if other departments were functioning 100%, then basic education would probably not be building schools, but due to the fact that there is a lack of functioning within other departments, unfortunately basic education has been tasked to build schools through the CD program and also through the EIG grant that goes to provinces. So that is why we do look at infrastructure, because it is a significant part of the budget, and it's a material amount for us to make sure that the department have specific targets that actually address the how the money is spent. And that's why it's also important that we looked at the DORA grant they're receiving from for HIV and AIDS and the Life Skills Learning, so there is some sort of a target or a measure tracking the actual implementation of that specific DORA funding. The issue of concurrent function, and what do we recommend? Yes, that is always a difficult thing. I think what should be noted, and we do understand how the law is written in terms of local government being on the same level as provincial government and provincial government being the same level as national. But I think what needs to be noted is the fact that there is a section in the framework for strategic planning that talks about concurrent functions. And that is actually then legislation that has been imposed by National Treasury, but it is in clash with the way that the DG does not have any jurisdiction, does not actually have any say over the provinces. But we do encourage the DG to at least influence, and that is what he does. He does influence quite regularly within the provinces, trying to ensure that everybody is aligning to the actual MTSF outputs and indicators. I think it's something that will continue to be a difficult function for the DG to actually implement, and for basic education national to actually implement going forward. But I think through influencing and trying at least as a sector to try and at least address the biggest concerns within the sector, then there is some alignment happening. So, yeah, I actually don't know how to recommend the DG to approach this issue, because from a legislative point of view, he doesn't have much of authority, but he is, and his department are having quarterly meetings, they call it SEM, and HEDCOM meetings, where they invite all the HODs of all the departments, and they discuss specifically strategic matters or IT or whatever, and they will discuss these issues. But unfortunately, it's still up to the premier in the province whether or not what they want to include in the APP and what they find is a priority for that specific province. So that is a difficult thing going forward. The next question was, do we have a time frame for submitting corrections? I think what should be noted is this is a value-added service that we're doing in terms of 18-19. So we cannot, we still have to stay objective to a degree because we have to come back and audit that specific APP. So what we do from our side is we will review, we will make recommendations to the department. Yes, we will review to see whether or not they have included those recommendations, but it's up to the department whether or not they decide to actually incorporate those recommendations. Obviously, we do notify them to say that if you don't incorporate this recommendation, it's going to lead to a finding in your audit report for the following year, or it's going to lead to a fact that we can't test the measurability of this specific indicator. But it's still up to the department whether or not they want to include it. But it is a value-added function from our side. We do make recommendations to them, but as noted, the department have taken our corrections and recommendations into consideration. We've not yet, my team, I just need to confirm with them that they've received the final annual performance report. When I spoke to them on Friday, when I prepared the presentation, they've not yet received it, but then we'll just confirm what has been incorporated, what has not been incorporated. So we do review, we make a recommendation to the department, and then we do make them aware of the fact that if they don't include our recommendation, this is the consequences going forward in terms of the reporting. So it's up to them whether or not they want to include. Repeat matters. I think one thing the only thing that's repeating that we identified last year was the exclusion of the MTSF indicators. That was again repeating. We are raising the ANA issue over and over, and it's just because we're doing a full comprehensive review of all the MTSF indicators. I think we understand as a AG's office and as management and as the portfolio committee communicated to me today, we understand the situation, but I think from our side we're just making sure we just raise everything continuously. So that will be the only repeat finding we did identify from the prior. For the current year, what we identified is a couple of new findings that we identified. So I think in general, the department's usefulness of the APP in general, we have not had material issues in the past. They've actually addressed those things. We have identified last year when we did the actual testing of the 16-17 annual performance report, we did identify one issue, and I don't know if you members will recall, we had a problem where we could not determine the percentage of learners uploaded onto LURITS. And the reason for that was because we could not determine the completeness of learners, and the systems do not allow us to actually confirm completeness of learners. So that is something goes back to reliability, and that is something that at this specific point in time I cannot give the committee assurance on for 17-18. I will have to go physically go and test, but that is the instances that we identify then going forward, where if your target is not measurable, then we're not even going to test. But at this specific point in time, we feel the targets are measurable, we can test them, but then reliability will only confirm once we get the annual performance report. But that is something we are in discussion with the department with, and we are busy trying to resolve. But yeah, I will give the committee feedback when we actually finish the actual reliability testing of that specific issue. So those are some of the things that we've identified. Then another question was, what support do we give the provinces to the APPs and the inclusion? Look, we notify the provinces up front, and just the same as with national, we communicate, and we, as soon as we get the APPs, we'll review them, we'll notify the province to say that these things are missing, please consider them, or please adjust them. So we try and, as a value-added benefit, try and, how can I say, strengthen the provinces in terms of the way they comply with the strategic framework criteria up front. But it's still up to the province whether or not they want to implement or accept it, or whatever they feel they want to do. So from our side, we do as much as we can. We cannot force the province to say that you have to include this. It's still the province's own responsibility. The only problem is when it comes to reporting for that specific year, yes, then we will raise findings if it's not properly included in your annual performance report. Because we express an opinion in the management report on the annual performance report, and we just speak about the material findings in the audit report for the annual performance report. I don't know if I answered all the questions. I think I might have missed one. I think I missed one of the members' questions. Okay, that's all I have at the moment. Sorry.
No, thank you very much. Though the response that we're getting was with the one which says it's still on the department as to whether they take what you are raising or not. For me, it goes right to the question that was raised, I think, very sharply last year by Parliament, not even this portfolio committee, on the question of how deep and how long are your teachers the ages of it. You know. I hope you understand me, Honourable Member, because really, if we, year after year, that is why I'm saying not even with this department as such, but if we'll always find the same audit reports with the same findings in various departments, then at the end of the day, the AG's office will say, we have raised these things up to these departments, whether they take it or not. Then at the end of the day, we are going to be saying what's really your role then when it comes to this. But it's one topic that I know the Parliament is taking forward as far as to say what powers can be given to this office to make sure that I'm not saying you must be godly, whatever you say must go, but at the same time, whenever there are findings that has been raised, how do you see the department hearing to the call and also taking the advice that that your office has raised. DBE, there was a question raised by Honourable Ollis that is coming straight to you on the issue of the assessment of teachers and how they are performing.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and I'd like to thank Eugene and the AG's officers for their work. I agree with your sentiment, Chair, and perhaps one way of dealing with this matter is threefold. But probably the obvious way from the AG's perspective is to recognize that there are provincial offices, and there's provincial oversight by the AG's offices in terms of provincial budget itself. And if indeed if a directive is issued through the provinces on the basis of a circular issued by the DG, then there is an enforcement mechanism, because then you would make findings against that particular province and it would be reflected in the report of the AG's office. I mean, that's a clear indication of what, and that doesn't exonerate the department from following up and overseeing it. But I thought if we work together in terms of this exercise, it would indeed help. Mr. Ollis raised some very interesting point. He always does, actually. Very, very interesting. But, you know, there's a context to everything. Take the issue of the districts. It's remarkable how districts have evolved and the kind of role that they are playing. At one stage, from the 86-odd districts that were countrywide, there were 24 to 25 of them in the Eastern Cape alone. Districts had their own nomenclature. Districts were divided in different ways. Some had 50 schools, others had 200 schools, others had 400 schools. there was no functions and responsibilities assigned to district, there was no proper budgetary allocation, there was no description of what a district manager should be, there was no description of what a circuit manager would be. And over time, we were able to evolve proper documents and policy documents in relation to that. What we can celebrate is in the past 10 years, we've met with district directors each and every time. And I think that would be an important indicator to say the Department of Basic Education, that is the minister, the deputy minister, the DG, and the heads of departments, meet with the district directors of the country every quarter for the past 10 years. Now, that means that there is something positive that is happening, and the impact of it is very, very clear. The result of that, and you know, it's difficult to assess, but if you speak to the district directors, and perhaps the AG should do that, obviously, they will tell you that the best that they derive from this is the professional learning practice that has emanated. They share best practices. They developed a kind of network amongst themselves where they enhance and promote each other's ability. And it's less about provinces, it's more about colleagues working in a very specific way. So yes, 22 years or 23 years might seem a long time, but we've basically made huge strides in terms of districts. Had it not been for the districts and how it's evolved, I do not think we would have the stability that we have right now in terms of our education system as a whole. And I thought that's very, very important. But again, that narrative, Mr. Ollis, has to be told by the department. You can't guess it. It has to be explained, and your concern is a very, very legitimate one in this regard. With regard to the principals and their competencies, there's three problems and the performance agreements. The one is really the refusal by the biggest governing party, biggest union, basically, to sign the agreement. That has been an issue, and it's linked, and I'll put it very directly, it's linked to the 0.5% to say a quid pro quo. If you want this, then you've got to pay that. And we're not going to be basically put into that particular situation. That nonetheless, Gauteng and the Western Cape are indeed signing, two provinces that are indeed signing performance agreements with principals. Other provinces are finding difficult, and because of the fact that there is no agreement in the ELRC. We're working extremely hard at that. But what we've done, and I just had a meeting, and I share this with you, colleagues, just a meeting with the legal section, because in the education Dibela Bill, Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill, there are three criteria that we put in there for principals and deputy principals and heads of department. One is qualification. The second one is experience, and the third one is competency. So these are going to be requisite skills in terms of the law that everybody has to abide by. Whether an ERC-LRC agreement is signed or not would become irrelevant, because this would be a law of general application, would be binding to all in the public service. And I think perhaps that is the most powerful way in which we can address it. Because I think all the political parties that are seated out here will say, you need special competencies for those who are in authority over there. You need different skills. It's not only about qualification. It's not only about experience, but you need a combination of all three. So that would be the criterion in which the appointment of principals would be made. So even if the locus of authority is with the head of department, what do you do then, basically? What guides them? What's the framework? And that is the suggestion that is going to make. And that will come to you for consideration when you consider the legislation. And I thought I would share that with you. So the AG's offices could take note of the fact that that is indeed what is happening. The third is about infrastructure, and I cannot but agree with the AG. Whilst it is not our core responsibility, if the allocation has been made, we have a particular responsibility to do so. The question then is, have you been doing better or have you been doing worse? I really and honestly believe that we are doing better. It's a huge effort. A huge effort to basically even get implementing agents who are supposed to have the requisite skills to be able to do so. And there has to be some kind of consequences in terms of the inefficiencies, and I do believe that the evidence is very, very clear that things are happening. So I can share with you, for example, following my last meeting, I receive every week from DBSA, from Kuha, from IDT, a narrative, as the minister, head of department, the DG receives it, and the minister, of the progress in each one of the progress. So because we told them, don't give us long stories out there, we don't want to read essays. Give us a narrative as to where you are, and we want a picture that accompanies it, so that we can see visually where it is, where it is. And indeed, that is happening. So these are good interventions that are being made that helps us to monitor. The last point here is and you know, I'm not going to the more, all questions are legitimate, but it is the issue that I think, which is a big political issue, and that is the issue of concurrent competencies. Now, education is a concurrent competency. I think what we can celebrate in the sector as such is it's less about politics and it's more about education in the sector. So it doesn't matter whether you're from the Western Cape or Gauteng or Limpopo. It's about our children and our sector as such. And I think we've done extremely well in terms of our interaction with MECs and in terms of how we manage it. So what are the yardsticks by which you can measure that kind of collaboration? And I'll give you a few examples. Word books which are produced by the Department of Basic Education, delivered to all schools without exception, are being used by all schools, and the use is being monitored and evaluated. There is no legal imperative. There is nothing that binds them. There's no contractual agreement. But it's just because of the value of those books and the added value in terms of quality education that all provinces and all schools basically participate in that initiative. The second is quite recently in terms of, and we discussed this in the Council of Education Ministers meeting, is the issue of ICT and particularly the digitization of curriculum content. All the provinces are agreed that we should have a cloud that has the curriculum content, that all provinces should have access to it, and all of them would contribute towards it. So there again, this collaboration. The third is in terms of how do you deal with legal matters. And here again, it's concurrent competencies. And we said that, look, please, even whether it's in the Western Cape, whether it's in Limpopo or the Eastern Cape, we have an interest in litigation. So if you are being challenged for any reason, in the Western Cape, for example, Mr. Olive, when they had the situation of the closure of schools, we said, don't keep us at a distance. We want to be part of that conversation because what affects you affects us, and we work collaboratively. So even in the Bella Bill, as we speak right now, the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill, we've invited the provinces to participate. The strategic legal team is not only from the National Department, it includes the Western Cape, it includes KwaZulu-Natal, and includes Gauteng. That is the representatives that have emerged from HEDCOM, a decision by the department. I really think, by and large, it's the kind of leadership that you provide. There are constitutional constraints, but if you overcome that and you recognize that there is a common good that you want to achieve, notwithstanding these blurred lines as they may appear in the Constitution, you are able to move forward. When that communication breaks down, when you start politicizing something that basically belongs to all citizens, then you have a serious problem. And I think we haven't perfected the art, but I think in education we've done extremely well. So if you were to ask me what's my relationship with any MEC or the minister's relationship, she will tell you it's excellent with all MECs. We have dinner together, we share thoughts, we have robust debates, we have differences of views, but these are not hostile or adversarial, they work in a good way. And I think that plays itself out in the manner in which this portfolio committee, for example, works. So it's a difference of opinion. I mean, not everybody's going to have it, but there is a kind of synergy amongst the members which says it is about our children, it is about education. And I think that should be taken note of. Now, your ENA is important. And that may be my last point, because much of what you've put out here is linked to the ENA. And it's an important instrument, and I will always say it, whether the unions are here or not, I've said in the absence and I've said in the presence. I've had engagements with them, and robust engagements in terms of how, and I've expressed my disappointment to all unions, not only to SATU, but to all unions, because they were all part and parcel of a particular initiative aimed at a particular outcome. And quite honestly, privately, they are all saying, no, you know, we shouldn't have. We should have been a little more guarded in terms of how we dealt with the matter. But the matter is moving now to another phase. The model has been adopted. And I think we must develop indicators for the new model that has to be included. In other words, to say, let's recognize that the old model does not exist, and it should not be an element or a factor or an indicator either in the provinces or in the national department, but we should develop indicators for the new model. Because those indicators are actually asked for by the monitoring and evaluation unit of the presidency. So quarterly when we report, we have to report to the presidency in terms of performance in mathematics and science and literacy in grades 3, 6, and 9. But if you don't have an instrument, how do you report back? And certainly it's a requirement, and I think we've got to work on that with greater haste. The last point, and I'm sorry, I'm now, because a lot of things has come at the same time. Whether you're talking about infrastructure and performance as such itself, we have to recognize that the solutions to that, and it leads linked again to what Mr. Ollis had raised the last time. You know, he spoke about infrastructure, but he also spoke about demographics and populations and how allocation should be made, but it should be driven by, they should be empirically based. I agree with that. And we have to basically commit ourselves as a government, not only the Department of Basic Education, that we need a web-based system that will provide us with reliable data so that the AGE's officers could say, well, what's happening there, we say, there, here it is. And then if he has to do, he can just do some random sampling to check on the credibility of it. That would help us because we have NIMS, the National Education Information Management System. The base is there. We have the LURITs out there. And I think we are on the cusp of achieving that there. So when we have our next conversation, you know, the AG could sit out here and basically answer all questions by giving information in real time just through the system of technology. So I'm saying we are moving there. We are almost there. And it's huge progress, and we've made this progress over time, but it's something that we have to take note of in relation to the issues that have been raised. So that's my comment, and the details will come, I imagine, from the team out here. Thank you.
Thank you, DM, and we have started for the team, the presentation that is going to come. I think we have gotten into it exactly to say, what are your action plans? That was very good. Thank you for that. Can you then hand over to DG to lead us on this one? Because I know the questions that even the follow-ups will be linked to what DG we are going to be coming up with. Can you get into the progress on the implementation of the changes?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair. In fact, my response was that our responses are comprehensively covered in this presentation on the action plan. Just to make one or two comments before Eugene leaves, to appreciate the presentation that he has made and his open and frank manner with which he is always approaching these issues, but also to just emphasize what DM and Honorable Mokoto have raised, that we must always remember the challenges of the nexus of the concurrent functions. That even though I write letters, I write circulars, provinces do not necessarily report to me. There's an intergovernmental arrangement that is in place. And therefore that must be taken into account. And I'm therefore saying, I'm not suggesting that things that we need to do from national to afford provinces to do what they are supposed to do should be overlooked. And the second point that I want to make, Chair, is that appreciating a lot the oversight that this committee carries out to the department, and I'm eternally grateful for the work that your committee does. I've said that before, but I will repeat it. But you must also take into account and to remind the AG as well that we are still a developmental state. We are still a developmental state. What that means for me, in my own understanding, is that it can't be that one day we wake up that everything is in place. That's what we are yearning for. That's what we are working towards. I've said to even the team of the AG, performance audit exercise is a new venture even to colleagues from the AG. It's new to us, it's new to them as well. For instance, let me take an example of one point. and the school principals are supposed to sign performance agreements. If you have school principals who have job descriptions, work plans that are signed, what do you need a performance agreement for? Why? What do you need it for? If there's a clear job description which is signed, a work plan which is also, which is much more detailed than a performance agreement. And I'm saying that because I'm a trained HR manager as well. It's part of the PAM. It comes from a collective agreement that comes from the ELRC, those job descriptions and the work plans. What else do you need? You go back to the ELRC, you negotiate performance agreements, you say, what are you looking for? You've got a job description, you've got a work plan, which are more detailed than a performance agreement.
Yeah, in October last year.
Yeah. but why do you need that? So I'm saying, Chair, we must just take that into account. My small caution, and then the CFO will start the presentation, Chair, is that appreciating the concerns that you have, my humble and respectful submission and advice to the committee is that we shouldn't be concerned to the extent that we want to create in the AG to be what the AG is not intended to be. I'm a bit worried, Chair, when you said how long and how deep are your teeth. Is the AG intended to have teeth to start with? I'm just raising it. You can take it as tongue in cheek. But I'm just saying, sometimes, let me give you another example. When we said to SCOPA that we do not believe that the 44 million in 2015-2016 financial year was it fruitless or wasteful?
Fruitless.
Irregular. Yeah, it was fruitless and wasteful. We said we don't have the facts to put on the table, but we believe that something wrong has gone into working out that calculation. Look and behold, the subsequent year we're able to prove that. And I've said to even this committee, I was told by members of SCOPA that because we got an auditing firm to come and prove what we said, in case they get to the same finding as the AG, I was going to personally be liable to pay them. I wish I could say the same to members of SCOPA and say, now that we have been proven right, you must be personally liable to do something or maybe to apologize. And my view is that the AG are made up of human beings. We are not free from errors, all of us. This team has, do an excellent job. 99% of the time, we agree from the work group with either their findings or the work that they do. And because of the professional way they approach things, even if we disagree, now the teeth, the depth, and the length, my only fear is that we might not be allowed to differ if we are going to make the teeth too long and too deep, and therefore we are going to lose the value of correcting each other. That's just a small point. I might have misunderstood your comment, Chair. I'm just saying I think they are doing an excellent job. They must continue to do so. They've gotten into an area that's going to get us to focus on service delivery. It's no longer about the regularity audit that is purely based on the financial statement only. And they are increasingly getting into the core business of our organization, and I appreciate that a lot. Chair, if you allow me to request the CFO to quickly take us through the audit action plan, the issues that the AG has raised are actually contained in slide 32 up to slide 36. To be more specific, that's how we have incorporated the issues that were raised. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Exactly, these are the depth and the length of the AG's office. That is why we are responding now to the issues that have been raised.
Yeah.
So that as we continue,
that
is how we measure them, exactly. Because if they were not raised, we wouldn't be responding the way you'll be responding today. Exactly, I think we are on the same page. CFO, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The presentation is on two areas. It would be the regularity audit and the audit of predetermined objectives. And then strategic planning will present on the predetermined objectives at the later stage. And then the outline of the presentation is as indicated on the slide. Strategic planning will present on item 4 and item 5. And then I will go straight into the action plan itself. The improvements on the audit outcomes. The department developed the audit plan after audit findings were raised by the Auditor General in the 2016-17 financial year. And as I indicated, it would be the progress that we've made so far. And the audit committee of the department reviewed the audit action plan. And then the action plan was also presented in a workshop that was held with the Auditor General in September 2017. And there were a number of adjustments that were made to the original document that was presented or advice that was provided to the department. So there was a lot of engagement that took place. And then the department also holds monthly meetings with implementing agents to enhance communication and monitoring of budget projects, performance of IAs, and expediting payment of contractors to reduce accruals. But the monthly meetings are not the only meetings that are held. There's also meetings that the deputy minister holds with implementing agents as well. And then there's also the development of MTSF-aligned customized program performance measures for inclusion in the provincial annual performance plan, but the details will be presented at a later stage by strategic planning. And then improved regular engagement with Auditor General to clarify for clarity on audit matters. And strategic plan and reporting and internal audit work closely with branches on all performance information that is reported and for verification of evidence. So this is happening continuously to ensure that the information that is presented is correct and accurate. And regular engagements with programs through quarterly branch reviews to improve planning and highlighting misalignment of potential risks. And the strategic plan with the provincial education departments meet through HEDCOM subcommittee to address gaps identified for MTSF alignment. And now this slide indicates the audit findings that were raised by the Auditor General, the root causes, and the recommendations are the recommendations that were made by the Auditor General, and then we indicate progress. So I will focus on the two columns, that is the audit finding and the progress. I won't go through the root causes and the recommendations. And one of the findings that was indicated was on commitment register schedules that are not updated. There is a lot of work that is going into this process. We are not yet where we want to be at this stage, but the department is working very hard to clear the errors in the commitment register, and the process of recording commitment per school in the commitment register has been finalized, and updates are done on a monthly basis. It must be recalled that we indicated previously that the reason we had problems with commitments is that they were not captured per school. In the beginning of the program, some of the projects were clustered, but we have managed to split them in per school, and we have now managed to do all of them. But there is still items that are indicating negative balances, and we are still working on that. And then the understatement of accruals, the accruals records are recorded, reviewed on a monthly basis, and submitted to finance on a quarterly basis. The department conducts monthly meetings with IAs, as I indicated earlier, and these issues are standing items in the agenda. Now, with regard to commitment register, what maybe we want to indicate to the committee what we've achieved so far. At the 31st March 2017, there were items that were showing balances debit balances at the end of the financial year. There was 1,074 items, and the rand value for those were was 340 million.
Sure.
By 31 December 2017, they had been reduced to 606, and then by 27th of February, they have now reduced to 525, and the rand value there is 168. Now, the remaining items that are still to be cleared can be broken down as indicated, and that 94 schools, the department does not have original contracts, but we are working with implementing agents to give us those because they couldn't have engaged contractors without contracts. So we are working with implementing agents to give us those contracts. For 430 schools, there are other issues that made the register to have those balances. There are outstanding variation orders that are in the process of being cleared. Incorrect expenditure allocations. You find that some schools have the same name or almost similar. They're very close, and then maybe the expenditure is allocated to the wrong school. So that one, those ones are also being cleared to ensure that expenditure is put correctly. And then there would be those where maybe a contract was cancelled and the replacement contract was not recorded correctly. So we are fixing those. And then we have also attached a list of the schools that have issues. It was circulated with the presentation. And then progress regarding accruals. Implementing agents are compelled to provide details of accruals at the end of each quarter, and this must be signed off as final on an implementing agent letterhead. And then the process was initiated before 31st March, although there may have been a few errors that were picked up. But since everybody is getting used to doing it, hopefully there will be a big improvement on this. And then the financial year dated for the current financial year, IAs have been requested to submit all the payment certificates issued by their professional service providers, and this will serve as a further test to determine if there is a matching invoice for the said certificate, which means it will hopefully reduce the errors in the accrual. And then these are the meetings that were held by the Director General with implementing agents on the monitoring of progress on each project. And then the dates are indicated there, and the minutes are available. We have copies of the minutes if it's necessary to provide those. Then the next finding is the misstatement of guarantees. And on this one, there is a schedule of guarantees which shows the status of guarantees. However, the schedule does not have the guarantees of all contracts. An updated list of guarantees has been requested from all the IAs. And I believe that there is also an attachment to the presentation that shows the information on guarantees. A guarantee will be in the form of a policy, and the contract and for paid for by the contractor, or retention percentage withheld on each payment of the contractor. Now, the shortcomings that were discovered were identified, and instructions were issued to IAs to provide additional details, such as proof that the guarantee is still active and being serviced by the contractor. IAs have been requested to provide the information on a monthly basis as part of their monthly reporting requirements, and follow-ups are made on any outstanding information. So reporting on a monthly basis would assist us to ensure that the guarantees are complete. And then MOAs with implementing agents not renewed or extended on time. All the MOAs were updated and extended, and the existing MOAs will be expiring on 31st March 2018. The progress of renewing MOAs of the implementing agents beyond 31 March is in progress. Now, this slide just indicates the date the renewed MOA was signed earlier. So the department is in the process to ensure that we don't incur the same problem. And then the department takes a long time to check the assets completed in terms of Section 42 And then the monthly meetings that are held with IAs, this matter is also raised with them to address the challenges that are identified. And then action plans are followed up and monitored. Now with this one, there's a few that were already submitted to the various to public works in I think it's Free State and Western Cape. And then there's a few that we are in the process of finalizing. We have a draft submission to the DG for the current financial year. There's about 39, but it's still in draft format. So this process is continuing to transfer the schools. But with the problem that I indicated of wrong allocations, that also is delaying the process. But we are working very hard to ensure that we resolve the matter. And then reconciliation or update of immovable assets. The monthly reports of IAs are reviewed by the ACD PSU team leaders. We then submit them to ACD project managers for approval. And then the other finding was on limitation of scope on ACD project, and there are supply chain documents for each project, but these ones, they reside with the IAs. The department has made an arrangement with IAs to approve, to avail tender documents for audit purposes. And the department has also initiated a document management system to address this matter. The document management system is being finalized on the infrastructure delivery management system and the standard of infrastructure procurement delivery management to ensure compliance and address shortcomings related to information residing in implementing agents. So this will ensure that we get the information quickly. And the document management plan entails filing structure, document classifications, and so forth. The next item is overstatement of recoverable expenditure of non-compliance with National Treasury Regulation 11.2.1 for claims recoverable. What happened with this one is that there were projects that the department had that were paid through the EU donor funding. And this happened over a number of years, but in the middle of the project, when National Treasury was reviewing the projects that were paid through the EU allocation, they had a problem with some of the projects, and they said the department must pay this project for themselves. So there were four projects which were incorrectly processed as donor projects and were moved to departmental appropriation, and this has been resolved. It has been paid through the voted funds of the department. So there won't be, it won't happen again, because these projects are now funded where they or placed where they are supposed to be. And then non-compliance with SCM processes by various implementing agents. The department infrastructure officials are appointed on IA bid committees to ensure that IAs follow supply chain management processes. And the supply chain policies of the IAs are being reviewed to verify alignment with National Treasury prescripts. And this is just the dates of the meetings, bid committee meetings in the IAs. And then this one I've already spoken to, but the projects that were affected are indicated on the slide. And then the next slide is understatement of intangible assets, URIC stamps, NIMS, and NSC. The progress on this one, all invoices received from FITA are reviewed before processing to ensure that costs are split between development costs and maintenance costs. What used to happen here, FITA would give us an invoice, but because some of the invoices were not clear, you find that it's allocated to maintenance, and only to find that part of it was development, so it was incorrectly allocated. So we have agreed with FITA that they have to indicate clearly on the invoice whether it's maintenance or development so that we allocate the invoices correctly. And then the next one is HR related, the vacant key position in SCM and other organogram-related matters. Now, this one is mainly about the supply chain management director. and the shortlisting process for the post has been completed, and interviews will be held soon. And the next one is number 12, non-compliance with requirements of public service regulation, as indicated there. The department requested verification reports from FSA and SACWA, and they are often delayed because of heavy workloads in those institutions. And due to the delay of receiving reports from SACWA and FSA, the department drafted letters of appointment indicating that officials who have falsified qualifications will be summarily dismissed and charges of fraud may be instituted against them should it be, there be a need. And then there was also an issue about departmental policies and procedures not being reviewed on time. And we've indicated that the policies and procedures are reviewed, and a list of the ones that have been reviewed, not all of them, but we reflected a few that have been reviewed. And then written quotations were not obtained when procuring goods and services. This was with regard to the Karagude project, the implementing agent that was involved there. And then the department is confident that this will not happen at all in the department, as proper procedures in procuring goods and services are being monitored and adhered to. Now, this is just a list of policies and the dates on which they were reviewed. And then HR matter. Approval not obtained for performing remunerative work outside employment of the department. And the progress on this one, letters to newly appointed staff have a section whereby officials are requested to declare any outside remunerative work they are engaged in, even before they are appointed at the department. And the DG has issued letters to officials concerned, informing them of the need to declare any outside remunerative work. And then supply chain management, again, suppliers in which persons in service of other state institutions have an interest. SEM practitioners can now access the DTI website or CIPRO database and the central supplier database of National Treasury to check if the owner or director of the company is also employed by the state. And then there's also the risk management was also another issue that was raised, and risk assessment per branch is being conducted for the 2017-18 financial year, and risk registers were updated. Three risk committee meetings were held in the financial year for monitoring of the progress made and the progress and process of risk management. And these are just the dates of the meeting. And then on this slide, we are just reflecting the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This is the one that DG was talking about earlier. We had an opening balance at the beginning of 2016-17 of 44.333 million. And then after the audit that DG referred to, there was an adjustment to this item by 42.755 million, and the balance that was left was 1.5. And we were able to recover an amount of 282,000, but leaving the balance of 1.296. But then in the financial year 2016-17, an additional success and wasteful expenditure was picked up, and it was disclosed to the amount of 11.157 million, bringing the total to 12.453. Now, during the current financial year, the amount of 7.208 was recovered from the volunteers in the Karagude program, leaving the balance of 5.245. And it must be noted that the program has come to an end, so it might be difficult to recover the remaining balance. And the department had opened cases with the SAPS, and SIU has also been involved on the matter, and they are currently investigating the matters as reported. And then the next slide are the ones that are referring to performance information, so I'll ask strategic planning to present the remaining slides. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. As highlighted, the next presentation will be highlighting some of the gaps that were identified by the AJSA for our 2016-17 financial year, and I will then take us through in terms of the responses to what has happened, where there's been developments, and also internally what has been stated within the annual performance plan of the department. The first indicator, it is on the proportion of principals who have signed performance agreements. The progress so far has been that an agreement has not been finalized. However, the job descriptions are currently being used for reporting purposes, and the DBE has also provided them a template to the PEDs in terms of recording on those principals then who have signed the job descriptions. Then the second indicator was on percentage of learners who completed the whole curriculum. Also, it was what was identified as a misalignment with the MTSF, and currently is that a new program performance measure was developed together with the provinces, which is PPM 219. However, then also because as there were still deliberations with regards to the provincial provinces in agreeing to this, what has happened currently then within DBE is that we have collaborated with UNICEF to develop a standardized curriculum coverage solution in addressing this indicator. And then also the indicator of learners in schools that are funded with a minimum level. We have also crafted a program performance measure together with the provinces for inclusion within their ACT, and it was adopted then at the HEDCOM of subcommittee on the 5th and the 6th of October 2017, as well as HEDCOM on the 16th of October 2017. In terms of the indicator on percentage of schools with full set financial management responsibilities on the basis of assessment, the progress was that we have also, together with the provinces, crafted an indicator, which is Program Performance Measure 222 for inclusion and then within the annual performance plan of the provinces, and it was also adopted. And the next indicator that was highlighted was percentage of schools visited at least twice a year by district officials, including subject advisors for monitoring and supporting purposes. The indicator was also crafted together with the PEDs as PPM 104, which was then part of the process of them then including that indicator within their annual performance plan. And then the other indicator identified was complete and consistent post-provision in policy and regulation in place and proceed, and proceed with the implementation of monitoring. The indicator is within the DBE-APP, which is under Program 3, so it would have been identified as Indicator 3.5.1. And in terms of the number of PDs, we have the post-provisioning process assessed for compliance with the post-provisioning norms and standards. In terms of the next indicator on the percentage of school principals rating support service being satisfactory, the indicator within the DBE was based on an improvement plan which was looking at see which other areas can inform the next time when the when there's an assessment being undertaken. So in the 17-18 APP, it was highlighted as an improvement plan. However, for 2018-19, it is included within our APP, which more responds directly to the percentage of the principals then who are rating the support services satisfactory. In terms of the indicator on percentage of district managers whose competency has been assessed against the criteria, the indicator is included in the DBE APP as indicator 4.5.3, which is also aligned to highlight percentage of district manager assessed against the developed criteria. In terms of the indicator of clear roles and functions of district office and minimum competency for district officials, what has happened thus far with the development of this indicator is that a collective agreement number 4/2017 has been signed through the ELRC, clarifying the job descriptions of the office-based indicators, looking at the roles and responsibilities as well as the selection criteria for. And this is just a list of the PPM in summary. I've already highlighted on each of the indicators that were highlighted just to show how they've been they've been structured according to the program budget structure of the provinces.
And also a finding lastly that was identified was by the OTAD was the Lewis nominator indicator 4.4.2 for completeness of learners number of Lewis integrity of denominator and master list. The recommendation was that the NDBE to strengthen the monitoring control to ensure information is complete and accurate. What has happened thus far is that data is uploaded on the Lewis system on a quarterly basis from the confirmed database of the provinces. And then DBE then is also currently assisting in conducting an audit as well as verifying then in terms of the data that from the provinces and the schools that is uploaded. In terms of inadequate monitoring controls, the recommendation was that we build exception reports mechanisms within the Lewis SA SAM and MS data management to improve the control environment in the detecting exceptions. Currently, DBE has strengthened or built validation controls or rules, if you'd like to call them, in terms of identifying the exceptions from the SSMs to the LURS. And the exceptions are then communicated then to the provinces and then so that then they can strengthen them in terms of the quality of what needs to be uploaded in terms of the report and also the data in itself. And then in terms of integrity of LURS data, it was recommended that we build exception report mechanism within LURIS to improve the control environment in detecting exceptions. DBE has collaborated with the Department of Home Affairs for verification of the learner ID, as well as on automated link with National Population Register active. And these then have verified the ID numbers of the learners, then is sent to the PEDs and corrected on the source system. So those were the key major findings when it comes to the performance information for 2016-17 financial year audit. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam. If I may ask before you, what is the consent, or how did you to consent database from the provinces? What is that? Where do you get that?
What?
That it's taken from the consent database of the provinces.
Yes, it would be the database of what we receive from the provinces, because some of the challenges we had with the Lewis before was that we would be trying to upload on our side where you find that at the provincial level they are also having a database that they need to upload. So now we've looked at the process of having all the provincial warehouses in place so that the data that is received from the provinces is tallying in terms of what we see as a nation holistically. So the provincial warehouses are there, and it's a way of also confirming to strengthen and ensure that what we get from the provinces is a true reflection of what has been uploaded on it as a reflection of the whole sector.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Let me welcome Anna Rozmachewski. We did receive your apology to join us a little bit late. Honourable members, let's engage with the presentation on the action plan, the progress that the DBE has taken in the final list. Honourable Audis, Honourable Boshra, Honourable...
I'll ask only one question.
Honourable Majesty, Honourable Baston, Honourable Mkoto, and that's part of this. Honourable Audis.
Thank you, Chair. My questions are all about slide 8, the commitment register. I made a fuss about this and about a dashboard, I remember about a year ago or something. For those of us in the committee that aren't accountants, perhaps you could just explain what you mean by debit balances. You know, debit balances are an accounting term, but what does that actually mean? And my real question is about these 94 schools where we do not have original contracts. I assume that means the national department doesn't have the original contract. So, I mean, that begs a whole range of questions. Why don't you have the contract? I mean, I heard the explanation just now. You know, because the implementing agent signs a contract with the actual builder or construction company or whatever. That's how it happens. That's not why you didn't have a check to make sure you got the contract. So why didn't you have a check to make sure you got the contract And what are you going to do in the future to make sure that your implementing agents don't sign contracts that you don't have copies of, so you don't know what's going on? Have you changed your modus operandi to make sure that every time a contract is signed, you get a copy of it immediately? There must be an immediate system where you get the copy so that, you know, when somebody runs away with the money, you've got the contract that you can take them to court about or whatever the case is. I want to know that that loophole is closed and why it wasn't done before. Those are my questions, thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. With reference to slide 13, I'd like to know how many implementing agents there are on the books of the DBE and how many of the MOAs will be renewed beyond March 2018. And then the progress reports of the IAs, it would be great if we could see something presented to this portfolio so that we can also determine what they have done and what they haven't done. And then I'd also like to know a slide, I think it's 19, it speaks about the tender documents that are not with the DBE. What would the reason be for that? And this could maybe explain why the IAs are so problematic and that something is amiss in the supply chain management department. And then with regard to filling of posts, I see slide 24, you speak about the vacant posts there. What is the turnaround time for the filling of posts? And I see you are busy with the interviews, and when do you envisage having this post filled? And then the same slide, but just on 20, on page 25, how many officials have you found have falsified their qualifications? It would be good if we could see a report on that. And then you speak about all newly appointed staff to sign letters of acceptance of post and assumption of duties and so many. How many of the current staff in the department have already signed these letters? And is there any way that you can determine whether these people that have signed and are still busy with work outside the employment of the department, how that work outside has impacted on their work for the department? These volunteers that were involved in the Karagudi program, I see the investigation is still underway because it was reported to SAPS. I trust that the DBE has got a database of these names, that these people never ever get appointed in the department again and in provincial departments. And then can you give me an indication of how many special need learners completed the whole curriculum that all the other learners followed? I know the curriculum is completely different for special need learners. What I would actually like to see is that the progress on alignment between the APT and the MTSF is being done for special needs as well. And then if I may just ask the DG, what is the possibility of engaging further with Home Affairs? Because in constituencies that border on countries like Mozambique and Zimbabwe, we often find parents coming across to South Africa, but they are unable to provide birth certificates. These learners then are not admitted into our schools because they don't have birth certificates. At the end of the day, they cannot write matric because they cannot register because they don't have ID numbers. Is there some way that we can engage to see how we can accommodate these learners? Because it's not their fault they were born in South Africa. It's a very difficult situation that these learners find themselves in. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you for the presentation. I just want to find out, you know, with regard to our budget, I don't know if it was discussed earlier, the fact that sometimes we find ourselves in a situation where we are unable to meet the target based on the finances, for instance, what do you do to make sure that, you know, the following year we ensure that we are able to cover those expenses as based on the targets that we set. For instance, when you talk about transport, we've seen that different provinces they are unable to provide the required transport. I mean, it happens year after year. Yes, KZN and Eastern Cape, they are unable to meet their obligations in terms of transport. What do you do in that case? Do we go back to Treasury and say, do we actually take those steps, or do we just accept the budget as it is, or do we do provisions during the year? But it looks like also that is not working. So I just want to find out, you know, what is it that we do to make sure that, you know, those really are, I think those are very essential that we are able to provide transport to our learners. The other thing that I wanted to find out, the road rates. It sounds as if it's now it has become web-based. We are able to access it and get information from it. I want to find out, like, you know, the scope of it, because when we talked about transport last week, it was mentioned that the Lotus is with limitations because it's not web-based. You know, you're unable to access it. But now when she was presenting, it sounds as if you can actually be able to see, you know, the whatever the province is loaded on the loads. So I just want to find out what are the limitations at the moment, or maybe just I don't understand. And also, are we able to expand it to get to a level whereby we can say, in this particular province, the books have been delivered, there's a teacher for each and every classroom, you know, so that that information comes across immediately when you need it. And are we able to update it constantly and to make sure that each and every factor that pertains to your school is loaded immediately and it becomes live so that people can be able to access, that we also can be able to access.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is based on the department not having the original contract and still have to get them from the contractor. Who gave the contractors the contract that the department don't have? And how sure are we that those contracts, receiving them from the contractors, are going to be the original contract? On the guarantee that a certain percentage will be retained from the payment, how long is the department going to keep retain that certain percentage from the payment? Lastly, Chairperson, performance agreement versus job description. According to this, the indicator that is based on PPM 107. It is said school principals rating the support services of district has been satisfactory. And we say the performance agreements are still outstanding. How do we rate the principals that your service, the service rendered or given by the principal is not satisfactory if they don't, or as the DG said, doesn't see the importance of performance agreement if the job description is there? Did I hear you right? Because the job description is generous for everybody, but to measure now a person to see or to have those one-on-one to see that this person has performed well, I know that sometimes we attach or we tell it a performance agreement with incentives or bonuses, of which is the principal whether he performs or does not perform, he or she does, she gets her or his bonus. Now, there is this, how is this principal binded to perform accordingly? Because when rain rains for everybody, for principals, if it is, but just to bind them without incentive that you will be doing this job as it is for you to do it without signing a performance agreement. Thank you.
Thank you, Chaplain. The first question will relate to the issue of risk management. I just wanted to check whether you have completed that risk assessment and what have you found out from that exercise, and are you acting on those findings to assist the department to be in good stead. The second point is on the financial disclosures of interest. Here I just note that the report says that the DG has issued out a letter to staff to disclose. But I just wanted to check whether there is adherence to that policy, and then did all the members sign that declaration of interest? And then I was a bit concerned when the issue of the funds that were lost through fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It was stated that they can't, you can't complete the, you know, the collection. I just wanted to know why is it difficult? Because is it only why does the end of the program mean that you can't recoup the lost funds? Why is it like that? Because I believe that I might be wrong, you correct me, that maybe the period has not yet prescribed. Can still recover that fund, and you know the people. The other issue is that I've noticed that throughout the report, a lot of issues related to internal control deficiencies. I wanted to check how have you made sure that you strengthen the capacity within to make sure that you are able to respond to the challenges, because like you will have it stated as one of the root causes, but when you respond, even with the first bullet where you were starting to respond, why it's stated as one of the causes, you don't talk to it, how you have strengthened the system to be able to respond to that problem, because if it keeps on recurring, it might be a systemic problem, so you have to correct that. And then the other issue then comes, I can see that you have tried to address them. But maybe if you can, because like the important thing is also to keep recurrence of these problems that are there. And then maybe if you can also cut on that, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong also, but I'm here for correction and to learn. The internal audit, the finance department, and the supply chain unit, are they properly capacitated to deal with this mammoth task? Because
if we have this budget and we have few people, like, I think one time I spoke to this CFO and I said, are you able to, you know, are you well empowered to deal with the challenge before you? And she was thinking that there are shortages here and there, so how are you responding to those shortages? Even in the report you highlight that you have employed, you are busy trying to employ the supply chain director. And the other thing that I wanted to check is the issue of the approach. What approach are you taking, you know, to deal with the action plan, the findings of the Auditor General? Are you reacting or are you proactive to, you know, these things? I think I have covered everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. DJ, for the few on page 15 and 16, I think mine will be on those two slides. There's a new indicator that you are saying we are included now, that one of percentage of learners who have completed the whole curriculum. But for me, it's a little bit problematic even now, because we are saying we are still in a process of standardizing the solutions and, you know, what is it that is going to be done by the program. My question is then, if we are saying it's a new indicator, why we're still building on it, are we not setting up our PDE for failure then? Because for now, for me, there is nothing that much measurable when it comes to that. We haven't found a way to do that. Why are we including it then as a means to respond to the AG's office? Because I think it's one example, as DG has said, where you need to sit down with the AGs to say, but we fully agree with something that you must be done. But do you have ways and means of coming up with? You're still developing that thing, so how are you going to do that? Oh, the one on performance agreement, I think honourable members have covered me well. Again, DJ, on page 16, the number of schools, the percentage of schools visited at least twice a year by district officials, including advisors, for monitoring and support purposes. Maybe my question there is not on the indicator as such, but does that indicator tell us that it's possible that there are schools that cannot be visited for the whole year? What is it that you are learning from it? Is it the way you are staffing our district office, and, you know, but I believe from what we are reading there is so much that you can learn from, and we can draw lessons as to say how best can we perform as a department. What is the status quo then? What is happening as of now? If we have a number of schools where really maybe they cannot be visited at all or one, what is it telling us as the department? And how best can we work on that area? Because I think there is a lot that we can learn from that indicator as it is crafted there, from your findings moving forward. My last one is on page 15, on the number of learners that are funded at the minimum level in all the provinces. If you can just paint for us a picture as to say, how are the province funding the learners as of now? What are the differences from various provinces? And, you know, moving towards the minimum standard that you are looking at, because we all know that there are those differences and differences from the province. Where are we heading to, and what is happening right now? What if we go to the provinces with the funding of the learners at their minimum level? Thank you. I'm handing over back to the department. DM, DG. I know Joe is going to lead this one.
That are listed, the PPM, like when the AG was presenting, he said that the PPM, majority of the indicators that he identified as missing in the, you know, action plan, right?
Okay.
They are found to be missing at a provincial level. And having noted the fact that every time the justification would be that we don't control provinces, can only be the influence. Like the national has responded to the issues, and like for us, it means that there is agreement that these are the issues that must be reflected. But I just wanted to know, how is it going to be, like, what extraordinary measure are you going to take to make sure that those things, they, you know, they become what they are supposed to be in the provinces and are captured as such. So I just wanted to check, because like, it's like you are talking to the wrong crowd, but, you know, you are talking to the right wrong crowd. So that's what I wanted to check, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm going to try to deal with the broader issues so that the detail can be dealt with by the DG and supporting staff here. And some very important issues have been raised. And perhaps maybe the last one is tied with what was discussed earlier in terms of concurrent competencies. And I think the anomaly is here, and really it's something that has to be referred to the Constitutional Review Committee. But it's a big issue. You see, the manner in which funding takes place, whether it's for, you know, just take infrastructure, for example, or anything else. You would have your conditional grant, which the department can control nationally in terms of performance. Then you would have your equitable share. And the AG's offices is here, and the AG's offices will tell you that when it comes to the equitable share, the Treasury sits with their counterparts, and they basically, on the basis of allocations, provide them with a globular figure. Once that amount is in the provincial treasury, the national department can have no say whatsoever. The provincial treasury can then move funds for a particular allocated foreign item, say scholar transport, and move it to infrastructure, or take from infrastructure and move it to textbooks. And that is the anomaly. Because it means that in terms of your constitutional makeup and in terms of your legislation, even through the division of revenue, there isn't much you can do. If it's a conditional grant, at least through the division of revenue, you can move it from one province to the other through an act of legislation. But the moment it's an equitable share, you lose control. This is a conversation that I had with the first, the earliest finance minister, Trevor Manuel. And I told him, but it cannot be correct. Now, let's look at the reality of the situation here, and this is something we've got to face and confront in the context of our democracy. A province doesn't perform, okay? What recourse does the national department have to say, well, this is the agreement, these are the norms we've agreed to. It basically sends a directive in terms of Section 101A. That is the constitutional mechanism. Right now, the legislation has not been finalized in terms of interventions, either for Section 100 or Section 139. So you've got the constitutional provisions, but you don't have any supporting legislation. It is still with COCTA. So you send me, there's no non-performance. Or alternatively, what the response is simply this, that we would have allocated to this particular program. However, Treasury, the provincial Treasury, has decided that it would utilize its resources for another purpose. Now, it means that we now got to basically go to finance to say, argue with Treasury in order to achieve this particular outcome. And this is the anomaly that we've got to do. Let's take the issue of an intervention. Now, so assuming there is no response to the Section 101A, the minister says, these are the norms you've agreed to, you failed to execute them, and they continue to do so, then the minister says, well, I'm going to intervene, I'm going to take over that function. When the minister does that, as we speak right now, there is absolutely no resources allocated to the national department to send its human resource capacity to even provide financial support. And we've had that reality in the Eastern Cape, where we've made an intervention in four areas. We sent key people from the national department to be able to assist so that you can basically have a sustainable initiative rather than just an ad hoc initiative. But nobody's funding it. So you, even when you intervene in terms of the constitution, in terms of the framework, the treasury framework, there is no provision for those contingencies. And we've argued already in cabinet to say, but really, this is something that must be dealt with, and it's an anomaly that I basically put forward to you to say, when it comes to equitable share, and the AG's office is here, they will tell you, in terms of our constitutional framework, we had that difficulty over there. If it's a conditional ground, they can come to the department and say, listen, you can't. You've got to oversee and monitor. You can't pay without fulfillment because it's linked to the performance, but not so with equitable share. The issue, the next issue that I would want to dwell on, and obviously the my colleagues are going to expand on that, is what Mr. Chase raised about Lurids. We are in the second phase of Lurids. The first phase was about getting our learners captured into the system, ensure that the data that is there is verifiable, and that's why you would see in one of the slides that we do so with the Department of Home Affairs so that we have credible data. The second phase is to ensure that it becomes web-based. Web-based means that it is now live. The system is now live. And what is it? What I can tell you right now is the most exciting thing. You are able to track and monitor attendance of educators. And not only that, if an educator has not attended, has been absent, we would be able to determine the impact of that absence in the performance of the learners. We would be able to track curriculum coverage. So we can do a range of things. We would be able to even work out transport, and that's what I said the last time, to find out which amongst your cohort of learners that are there in this particular class, how many of them live beyond 5 kilometers, what kind of transport is made available then, so you have a credible database that would manage it. So that would enable provinces to speak to the provincial treasury as well as to the national treasury to say, this is the reality, this is the database, and that's why a web-based system would become so critical for us as the Department of Basic Education. It would be an informed. So in terms of the applications, you could use that web-based system perfectly. In fact, the SESEMS would be the platform on which we use this web-based system. And 8 of the 9 provinces are using it, and the Western Cape would certainly join with us, because they've agreed, realized that with what we're going to achieve there, it's important for them to be locked into the system so that they could have access to all these benefits out here. But right now, the systems are somewhat compatible, but I think ideally all of them would have to be on one platform. So there's huge, huge potential insofar as that is concerned. That's why we are fighting so hard. We are kicking and shouting to say the secret to our success lies in connectivity. And again, it's not with the Department of Basic Education we've got to rely on our sister departments, but there is an interministerial committee that is indeed looking at that. Then the issue of measurement of curriculum coverage. It's also a useful thing because one has to look at the genesis. The genesis of our curriculum itself in terms of its evolution and development was this. We replaced an old curriculum with a much more modern curriculum that is based on knowledge, skills and competencies and attitudes and values. We celebrated, it's wonderful. Then we, at that time, basically introduced a system of outcomes-based education where we assumed, which is extremely good, which actually basically is a trend currently, globally. But the educators didn't have the capacity to develop lesson plans, they had the freedom of choosing their textbooks, they could develop whatever plans that they felt were relevant and appropriate, and there was no uniformity. And we had to ask you to say, are we not there yet? Until we develop the capacity amongst our educators, we should have minimum standards with guide. So if you look at your curriculum, that's why it's called a curriculum and assessment policy. It states clearly what the expectation is in terms of curriculum coverage for every subject in every grade. It also states very clearly what the assessment instrument should be. So no educator can say, listen, I'm confused now. And that is why there is no confusion. That's why everybody embraces the curriculum. They know precisely who must now. The question then is, who must monitor that? the implementation of the curriculum. Shouldn't it be, and this is where your performance, and I link it to the performance agreement of principals, because they are the key curriculum implementer. Whether they delegate the responsibility to the deputy principal or a head of department, whatever, could be an internal arrangement, but could be part of the responsibility. And therefore, your performance agreements with your heads of schools, the deputies and the heads of department become so critical in terms of this arrangement over here. And for that reason, you know, we're basically making sure that the legislation covers that particular element, and certainly we would exploit optimally the job description that has now been accepted in the ERC. It was not accepted until about, I think, August, September, late in last year. And that was a huge celebration to say, for the first time we can now say that we don't require the agreement that had to be signed by all parties in the ERC, because this has overtaken events, and it's how we use the matter optimally. It is not only just an agreement, a job description, it is also linked to a work plan. The work plan that is signed by the principals would then determine the kind of performance we expected, and it would be individually based, rather than a generic agreement that has to be signed by a principal, in other words, one and the same wherever you go. So that would be very, very helpful. Chair, I'd rather stop there, because I think the other issues are really of a more specific nature, and I think they must earn their salary. They've come so far, they've travelled, and really our officials would be able to deal with it. But no, they would do it. They're very competent, and I'm sure they would be able to deal with it. More specific questions. This is the last one. I call her my whip, you know, always, because she's the whip of the institute. She raises a very important point about what we should do. I think there are two suggestions here with regard to the curricula, those that have not been paid. One is to be alive to the fact that this claim prescribes within 3 years. So that's important, to say we've got 3 years within which the claim prescribes, so if we're going to take any action, we should do so swiftly. The second is, as we evaluate the claim, we must look at the value of the claim. If it's 150 rands, are you going to basically instruct a lawyer? The moment you give him an instruction or her an instruction, it's going to be 250 rands. And the likelihood of getting that money recovered would be small. So if, depending on the size of the claim, if it's a significant claim, yes, let's pursue it. There would be a basis to do so. But I think the third alternative, the third point that I would like to make would be the very useful point. To say that we have late charges with fraud, or fraud, we've got to follow this because when the people admit fraud, then part of the order that could be made as terms of the sentence is that the condition of the sentence would be that this amount be repaid. Mm. So the courts can then impose, will almost become your collecting agent in a sense, and impose that as part of it. Now, in order to achieve that, it's important that we liaise with the prosecuting authorities to say when these matters come up, this is the basis on which you could settle. So even if you're going to suspend the sentence, make sure that it's the condition of the sentence, that part of it you would have fined, but accompanied with the fine would be the repayment of this amount, failing which you would then impose a jail sentence. We've made interventions of this nature in the past, not really in the department, but in another life. And it's worked extremely well. It's worked extremely well, and I think that's a possibility that we would have to pursue. But I really say that this... This committee really is quite remarkable in terms of their deep insight into matters. So I learn a lot when I come here, by the way. You make me think all the time.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Before we go, come to the DG,
can you join me? If I may, thank you, Chair. I just want to ask the DG, the equitable share, are you allowed to transfer from one department to another? So, I'm going to give it through here. Mpumalanga Education Department has just transferred 90 million of its budget to health. I mean, we're struggling as an education department. Is there any way that you can look into that matter? Or is it not your jurisdiction? And then the other issue that I'm just afraid the minister, the DM is going to leave. If Lewis is now web-based and so it's going to perform so well, are we still going to stick to the SASAMs? Or is that going to fall away? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Deal with that, You know, Lurus itself, the platform that people are used to, accustomed to, is FSMs. So whether you go to the Eastern Cape Lurus, the Lurus itself would be basically an application that would sit with the FSMs.
Okay.
So you don't replace the one system with the other. It's really an application that's integrated into the SSMs, which gives you all these wonderful possibilities. Because if you're now going to take an old system that has been working quite well and replace it with a completely new system, it's really going to be an unnecessary expenditure. So we have the platform, we use the platform, but we use the application in a way that makes that particular function, the SSMs, much more efficient. In other words, the SSMs, as it were, would be basically going through a radical technological transformation.
Okay.
Is it a follow-up?
Yes, it's a follow-up.
Okay, because I wanted to teach it to answer the question. I'm sorry, did you? Yes?
I'm sorry, it's,
Deputy Minister, I just want to find out if we're talking about the equitable share, okay, before we actually allocate the budget to the different provinces, and seeing that, you know, the provinces, they end up doing whatever they want, not doing what we're asking them to do, what powers do we have to say, we're not going to give you the budget until, you know, this is what we want to see you doing. Otherwise, we're going to approve the budget.
Cool.
Do we have, no, I'm asking, what powers do we have? That's the question that I want to ask. Before we actually give the provinces money, don't we have some leverage on our side to say, this is what we expect you to do, and it has to be done, otherwise we won't approve this budget? It's just something to think about.
Okay, thank you. But for me, just to add on that one thing, there is a thing that when it comes to learner transport, I know you have always been saying this for a number of grants now in DBD, but I still say, up until we have learner transport funding going to the provinces as a conditional grant, when are we moving towards that, so that we can see at the end of the day we can have these learners benefiting from that? Because as we have been explaining, when it comes to the equitable share, there's nothing much that you can do. The provinces take that decision. So what is stopping us then at this level nationally to make sure that we direct the funding for learner transport as a conditional grant, so that it can be easier for us to make sure, as to say, like we do in nutrition, every school, we are assured that each and every learner is getting a healthy meal every day, just to check whether it's healthy enough or not. But let it be even when it comes to learner transport, because it's a huge need of which everyone wants to see those learners benefiting. That is
Chairperson, I've said it quite publicly and to the committee. In fact, just a week ago, we were in the transport portfolio committee, and we had transport and education deliberating on the challenges of transport. And I said, now, you know, one of the things, first thing you've got to do is decide where do you locate it. You can't have five provinces having it with transport and another four provinces having transport in the jurisdiction of the Department of Education. Actually, you know, in terms of the Constitution, it's permitted. They could decide that. In terms of the broader policy, we have a transport policy that seems to be the direction, and the argument basically is that learners are transported to school, the roadworthiness, the certificate of fitness, the competency of the drivers, these are all matters under the jurisdiction of the Department of Transport rather than the core function. The other argument, on the other hand, is schools are best able to manage this particular exercise. They have the data, they have the information, the children are brought over there, they would take that responsibility. Now, I said, look, I'm not choosing sides over there. It's a complex matter because you left voices on both sides. And it does seem as if the tendency, even those who have moved to transport, seem to want to go back to education in some provinces. Seems to be that there is a greater comfort and ease because it's better management. So, for example, if I give you an example, Chair, when we made the intervention in the Eastern Cape, and the Deputy Minister was quite involved in that particular process, although it's set with transport, one of the difficulties, the first instruction we gave is to say, listen, you can't have transport managing it when you don't have somebody in education giving you the information. So they basically had to second somebody from education to sit in the Department of Transport to manage that task. So one can basically find creative ways of dealing with the matter. My personal view is that it has to be a conditional grant. You know, we feed more than 9 million children. More than 9 million. It's phenomenal. Every day, every school day. And it's done through a conditional grant. And I think we're doing generally very well. Our workbooks are another example. We deliver more than 60 million workbooks. It's delivered on time to all schools across all provinces. And it's working well. And it's through resources that are in the hands of the Department of Basic Education. So generally, where it's a national initiative, it seems to be working much better. Some provinces perform otherwise. If it's an equitable share, you have some provinces perform well, others don't perform too well. And at the end of the day, the buck stops with the national department to say, you are letting our children down, you are not doing this, you are not doing that. And that's where we come and sit out here and answer questions. Even if you look at the questions that Ms. Bosov, yourself as well, would send to us as a national department. How many children in the Limpopo receive this? How many kids are transported from in Eastern Cape to that? How many special need facilities are provided in this particular requirement? We could be very nasty as a national department to say these are provincial competence, send it to the provincial legislatures. Wherever possible.
That's what they say.
Yes. No, they do that occasionally.
Okay.
But wherever possible, I know I sign those things before they go through. In 80% of the cases, they provide the information. At times, hard to get information. At times, they will tell you, we have received this information from 6 provinces, we will provide you that. We could be nasty, but we're not. But it's again the this is the anomaly we're facing out here. Is it a provincial responsibility in the provincial legislature, or is it a national responsibility? And those are blurred lines. So my argument with the conditional grant, my final word, is I feel it would work better. Because the impact of it, there are so many thousands and billions of rands are being spent over there. And if it's a conditional grant, I know it's extra responsibilities on the part of the Department of Basic Education, but I don't think any political party is going to argue that 10% of those resources should be utilized for oversight, management, and administration by the national department. Why not? If you're going to have an efficient system of transport which you can control and manage nationally, I think that's a view that I have, and I would want to support it. And certainly, the ministry will take it up with Treasury to say, please look at this very, very seriously. Otherwise, we're going to have the same position. You even have presentations where figures are provided by provinces, and you're not even sure whether they are credible figures. And then we've got to, on the basis of those figures, assume that they are correct and credible, present it to a committee over there, and then the first question to say, have you checked on every school or every district to ascertain whether this is correct? The national official will say, but no, I couldn't, but we've been to so many. You've been to so few schools. Shouldn't you go to every single school? How can you do that when it's an acceptable share and it's not a competency of the province? So one has to be realistic in that context, but the short answer to my very long response is yes, I support the argument for conditional grants.
Yeah, I'm extremely excited with this debate and discussion. And I do believe that we need to have some dedicated discussion around concurrent functions and implications of that for service delivery in basic education. the Deputy Minister talked about Eastern Cape. Some members will remember that I was part of the team that was sent to the Eastern Cape, so I could share some lessons, and somebody said we have one of the best constitutions in the world, but sometimes when it's tested it looks like not so much one of the best, especially when it's tested on concurrent functions. No, I'll only say that here. When I'm outside the country, I'll talk about this wonderful country, we've got the best constitution in the world. But I'm being open and frank because I speak to you lawmakers who have, the capacity and the responsibility to look at some of these things. A case in point was the issue of textbooks in Limpopo. You ask every South African at the moment, they put the blame on the minister. No way in the constitution is the minister expected to deliver textbooks in any province. It's part of the concurrent functions. Concurrent functions means functions are split between a province and a national department. And those functions are clearly stated. Where money is not located, we play an oversight role in terms of monitoring whether there's compliance with policy. But Chair, I leave it there. Let me respond specifically to these questions. Honorable Ollies, maybe let me start because other members asked a similar question. Because we're using implementing agents to deliver school infrastructure, for ACD in particular, and in most cases even for EIG through provinces, we are expected, that's why we've included in the presentation, to have memorandum of agreements with implementing agents, which should cover, you know, all things that we expect an implementing agent to cover. The contract with a contractor is between an implementing agent with a contractor, not the department. But we are expected to ensure that implementing agents have got all those in place, because when the audit happens and we direct the AG to the implementing agent, when the AG goes to the implementing agent, the AG should find all of these documents. Now, we have discovered, and you've asked, when did we discover this, and what are we going to do for the future? We discovered, as the CFO explained, in the past, the payment and the reconciliation of records was not done per project. It came as an audit finding that, in fact, payments were not done per project. Mm-hmm. Because money was transferred in terms of the ball figure of the number of projects that are expected to be carried out. We have now to deal with reconciliation as far back as 2011. And members of SCOPA couldn't see sense when I said to them, you know, having been appointed in 2015, I take the liabilities and assets. But please understand that I even have to deal with projects as far as 2011 to reconcile them. Because if we don't do that, they'll keep on reflecting in our records as projects that have not been reconciled. Mm-hmm. So ever since we have unbundled all that and now dealing with them per project, we're even able to determine where we paid more than the expected amount. If the implementing agent is unable to justify the variation, we recover that money from them. Mm-hmm. And we're dealing with this retrospective, unfortunately. So that's why even some of the contracts, it was not necessary to say give proof of the copy of the contract, because we're not paying the project. And we have now started to ensure that the payment and everything is done per project. So going forward, it's what came from the findings also of 2016 and 2017. And we are saying, going forward, that's what we've agreed with the AG. That's how it's got to be done. We reconcile the past, but we make sure that there's no recurrence in the present, to also address the point raised by the Chair. Honorable Boshoff, the number of implementing agents, we've got 10. And by the way, they include both national and provincial departments of public works, who also have similar challenges, by the way. National is not better than provinces in any way. And Deputy Minister can attest to that. And that information is contained also in slide 14 to slide 16 of the presentation that we made. And then slide 19, Honorable Boshoff, tender documents which are not with the department, I hope the point that I've just explained has covered that. Turnaround time for filling of posts, maximum of 3 months. We are able to fill them in a shorter period, but at most it's 3 months. And now that there's also a finding on the vetting and the verification of records, to avoid this finding, the turnaround time might be longer. Not because of us, because of what has been reported in this action plan, that it takes the South African Security Agency sometimes more than 6 months, sometimes more than a year to vet employees. So it's going to create a finding to us if we just proceed and appoint. So it might mean that it might even be longer. The same applies to SAQUA. Officials who have falsified documents, I remember one in my current tenure as DG, and we dismissed that official immediately, with immediate effect. We had falsified, I think, the grade 12 certificate. I can't remember others. But I'm sure we could give you more of this information if there is. And then the database of Karikude volunteers, it's a great pity Honorable Ollies went out. We received an email from Honorable Ollies presenting to us some of the complaints that came from the Karikude volunteers. Oh, he can hear me at least.
No, I don't think he can hear you.
And the delay in paying these volunteers was precisely based on recovering this fruitless and wasteful expenditure that has been shared with you in the report. We've been able to report only 7.2 million out of 11 million. And members of SCOPA said that's very good. But having even, you know, observed that, it didn't afford us a good day for that appearance. They say it's one of the few departments that were able to recover that amount of money. And DOM is right. I've met, I think, with about, if I'm not mistaken, 4 or 5 law enforcement agencies on this matter and others to say, beyond this point, can you please take over, attach property to make sure that we get to the tally of 11 million. And I'm sure you don't want to hear what Hawks said on this matter.
It could be quite interesting.
Well, is it the SIU or Hawks? I think it's Hawks who wrote to us recently and said that this matter must be pursued somewhere. It's not. I can't remember whether it's Hawks or SIU. I think it's Hawks. No, my recollection says it's Ox. SIU is doing a great job with the Free State 10 project. They wouldn't have turned us away, I don't think so. So we do have this database, and the line function is working with South African Police Services to make sure that we get all of these people criminally charged and pursued with a view of recovering the money. So I take your advice, Honorable Boshoff, as you always do, as well, in terms of ELS and learners, that curriculum coverage should not only be about your ordinary schools, but it must cover the ELS and learners as well. Undocumented foreign learners, it is a big challenge, and it is a challenge that we are tackling with the Department of Home Affairs. I'm sure the Deputy Minister would have spoken about it as well. There's a case in the Eastern Cape regarding this matter. Because maybe let me leave it there. There are huge challenges. At some point, although we complain that we're not getting enough money, I'm sure you'll be disappointed to learn that in some instances you get learners coming from Lesotho, coming from Mozambique, coming from Zimbabwe, and coming from Namibia, just to come and collect stationery and textbooks and then go back. Mm. Mm. Now, the same with health. I mean, Minister Motsoaledi shared a very devastating experience of our system, health system, catering mainly, you know, foreigners and people just coming in to benefit and then go back. Mm. But I'm sure Deputy Minister could come back on that one as well, about undocumented foreign learners. Honorable Machesi, yeah, you know, equitable share and meeting our target, I think the earlier discussion has characterized the challenge that we really faced with. We can see that provinces are trying. I'm sure that the reports that we presented to you will show that there would be adjustments, more money being added, but the fact of the matter is that the targets are not met. And until, as the Deputy Minister correctly pointed out, until we have a full handle over what is allocated, we can only advise, we can only put together reports, but beyond that point is the purview of the provincial executive to decide what to do with that. So your concerns and your frustrations are well placed, and I think something needs to be done. I'm not sure whether DM will remember, Professor Kata Asmal used to say, running a national system at times makes you feel like a eunuch. That you've got these things that you see that they are not done right, but you don't have the means and authority to change them. So that's what sometimes one feel like as well. Honorable Basson, the original contract, I hope I have explained that one as well, guarantees the retention that has been made has been between 5% and 10%. Retention, it's only paid after the completion certificate is handed over for a project. There's something called a snack list. You know, you go through the snack list to check whether everything has been fixed, and you're getting a project that is complete, and then once that is issued, then you can pay the retention fee to the contractor. We were talking before coming to this meeting that there's a need to increase it even probably DM beyond 25%, and Mr. Pila was advising against that, saying there might be serious repercussions, but I said to him, what we are interested in is that projects are completed and contractors don't run away from projects. If it means that we retain even 40%, we'll do it. But if we need to increase it, maybe we might have to consider that.
DG just on that. Upason
is banning.
It's because, you know, when visiting some schools, like Albert Luthuli School, we had to visit, the school was complete, and it was almost now a year, the school was more than a year finished, but there were so many faults. What do you do on such things if the contractor has received the money and they discover that after that? These contractors, they are forced, they are leakages, they are crackles, they are what that happened after you have paid.
Yeah, the retention fee, I have to use my memory now when I was still in the province. I think it would take about a year to a maximum of 3 years, keeping the retention fee. Yeah, he confirms that my memory is right. So you monitor that. It's not something that gets done as soon as the school is given over for occupation. You observe it for over a period of time, about a year to 3 years. Yeah. Because some damages can happen, you know, even after a year. So if that school is still under 3 years, it's still safe, the contractor must come back and fix those damages. Well, DM has responded to, you know, the performance agreement and the job description. What is a performance agreement? And I want to try and give an HR response to this. A performance agreement has got Annexure A and Annexure B. Annexure A is a job description. Annexure B is essentially a work plan. Now, if you have those that are signed by school principals, do you really want to insist for something written performance agreement?
Jim, I think our argument now won't be on what is supposed. It's on the indicator that is there in the department. Because we said at the end of the day, we want to address the way we frame the indicators and what is expected. So I like the argument you're coming up with, but this is the indicator that has been there, that we have been found not performing on. So as to say, the argument that we are discussing here now, where does it put us? Where, how are we moving towards, you know, renaming or rearranging the indicator that we have, so that at the end of the day, when you come to the ages finding, we know exactly what is the better.
I fully accept your direct picture. Fine, Chair. We'll do exactly that. We'll even have a discussion with the AG and see how we deal with this matter going forward. Thank you for that advice. The risk assessment completed, I think, the director internal audit says it has been completed, the risk assessment. And remember, Chair, we are dealing with 2016-2017 audit findings in terms of the audit cycle, but we are also making sure that they do not reoccur in this financial year. We use that audit findings to inform the current, but to make sure that going forward they don't come there. And then the financial disclosures of interest, all SMS members do their financial disclosures beginning of every financial year. The rest of the other managers, communication goes out to remind them virtually every year that they have to do that. If it's discovered, because that is also checked regularly, whether all people have disclosed financial interest and so on, we take appropriate action against the affected officials. The issue of the 11 million in Karikude I've explained. I think I don't need to go back to it again. Honorable Mokoto also raised the issue of the internal control. Again, just to remind you that this is what comes from 2016-2017, before we strengthened the internal audit, before we even got the director internal audit. Indeed, that was the state of play, which was even confirmed by the AG. Even in the 2016-2017 financial year. They even said that it's a great pity that the head of internal audit came towards the end of the financial year. The impact would have been much greater than that year, and they are looking forward that 2017-2018, that impact should be much more than what we saw in 2016-2017. And then our approach to, and therefore internal control, it's our priority. We have strengthened internal control. We come from a background where our internal control was weak, and therefore we have a very strong internal control now. Our approach to the action plan, well, you wanted to know whether we are reactive or proactive. We would elect to be proactive, but if there are findings from the AG, the audit exercise, we can't ignore them as well. But we'll prefer to be proactive. And I think as part of strengthening our risk assessment, our risk committee meeting regularly, strengthening our internal control, will come across as being more proactive than reactive. And then the Honorable Mokoto also talked about indicators that are still missing from PEDs. I'm sure we'll take that discussion with the AG. And by the way, the AG was there, invited to a HEDCOM workshop where this matter was discussed. And HEDCOM resolved that I must convene a HEDCOM subcommittee where the AG forms part of it, DPME and National Treasury, to get some of these things resolved once and for all. There's a meeting scheduled for April. I can't remember the date. We've been battling to get, I think it's the 3rd or the 13th of April. So we'll be meeting and hopefully we'll resolve all the outstanding issues around this matter. Chair, the curriculum coverage a tool, you are right. The indicator has actually been there, but the tool to measure curriculum coverage, we've delayed in developing the tool, and will accelerate or expedite the process of finalizing the tool. In fact, we have tools that we used before, but with these developments that Deputy Minister talked about of the new curriculum and so on, there's a view that we need to come up with a new tool altogether that takes all the dimensions that the Deputy Minister, you know, skills for a changing world, you know, all of these aspects of the new curriculum. And then slide 16, well, percentage of schools visited by a district official at least twice a year. And the chair's question was that, what do we take from this? My sense is that there would be schools that are not visited at all by district officials. In fact, if this would go my way, I wouldn't even say twice, because the human resource that you have might not be able. Some schools that are dysfunctional must be visited more often. Some that are self-managing, if it's not broken, why? So as more and more schools become functional, they require less monitoring from the system. And we can even use other tools to monitor those schools. There's now DDD, where I'm able to monitor a school. I'm not suggesting that officials will not go to schools, but for some, I can monitor even from Pretoria using the advantage of technology. I can tell them how many learners are regular, teachers, and so on, because that information is populated on the system, and I'm able to pick that up. And I'm saying, as more and more schools become functional and as we able to use technology, we must deploy our human resources of face-to-face where we need them most, particularly to dysfunctional schools that do not just need monitoring, but require mentoring and making sure that they also become truly functional. Slide 15. Schools that were funded below the minimum norm, I'm unable to give, you know, specific details at this point, Chair, but what usually happens through the planning branch, we do an assessment and we write to individual provinces, provinces that do not meet the minimum requirements, and we make them aware of that. My recollection tells me that when I got appointed, there were about three provinces. It was Eastern Cape, Limpopo, I can't remember which was the third province, and we wrote to them, and they subsequently corrected. Now, I have to go back and check whether we still have that. I'm sure colleagues, the CFO and the colleagues from strategic planning can help me with some of the questions that I did not respond to. There was one from Honorable Ollis of Commitment Register as to the debit balance, you know, explanation around the debit balance. What does it mean?
No, that is the negative balance that we have when it is more than the committed amount, negative commitment.
Which means the explanation that I gave to say that in the past, payment was not done per project, but payment was done per group of projects. Now that we are delineating that per project, and that's how we are picking these things up, where overpayment has been done, that money is recovered.
Thank you so much. Chair, just two issues. The one is about the phenomenon that Sponsor raises about children without papers, you know. It's a huge phenomenon because just if you take about 4 years ago, you had more than 280,000 refugees from Zimbabwe alone. That excludes your illegal immigrants. And people have been literally, in some instances, dumping the children in schools. Now, what the schools have been doing, if you take the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and everywhere else, is they've been accommodating these learners to say, within 90 days, please produce the relevant documents. Mm-hmm. The parents, the caregivers, make no effort whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Child is undocumented, and I mean, the department has a responsibility. And now, because of that, the Eastern Cape, they brought an application to the department to say that whether a child has an identity document, a visa, a passport, or so, is irrelevant. You cannot hold the child back because of the negligence of the parent. But that technically would mean that you could take your child, tell them, go to that school out there, leave the child there. The parent, the principal of that school is then obliged in law to accommodate the child, irrespective of whether the child is documented or not. Now, that's an absurd consequence. And I'm just we're contesting the matter. We're opposing the matter application. We've joined the Eastern Cape. And we've also got the Department of Home Affairs, because one of the points that the Department of Home Affairs makes is a valid point, to say the Constitution says that a citizen may arrive and leave the country, you know, as he or she pleases. It doesn't say any person, which means that if you are a foreigner, you have to comply with the laws that apply in a particular country. It's a regulated. As a citizen, you have a constitutional right. But what the assumption is being made that it doesn't matter who it is, from where the person is, they would have the same right as a citizen, and that is not correct. So whilst we're not going to be xenophobic at all, but I think we have a particular responsibility of ensuring that our schools and our health facilities are not abused. The Deputy Minister for Health, for example, told me that in one of the hospitals in Gauteng, 60% of the maternity clinic wards was occupied by people who came from neighboring countries. That's the reality. So we have a similar phenomenon in our schools in the neighboring areas over there, and we should manage and regulate it. Not to exclude anybody, but it must be regulated, and it's a serious issue, not to make it a human rights issue. I just thought I'd raise that, and the second point, if I could, just with your permission, is with regard to the issue of practical completion and final completion. You see, the department used to retain 5% for the final certificate, which means in law what you would then do is for a period of 90 days, you retain an amount of 5% to fix up the snag list. You can't do it for 3 years. You would give a warranty for 3 years, but you can't retain an amount for 3 years. And we argued, in fact, all the implementing agents have agreed, but we're going to say for the completion certificate, we're going to retain 20%, which means that you've got to ensure that the snag list is complete before you get your final draw. Because for 5%, it just didn't make sense for them to basically, they would go on to another job. We did that, and we told them that where you have not performed, in other words, where you have not issued a final, a completion certificate, because this is what the AG is going to say. They say they don't care whether the children are occupying the school, whether it's safe for them. We want to see the final certificate. That is the basis on which they assess our delivery. So if you have 20 schools that are practically completed, and only two have a final certificate issued, they're going to say you've delivered two schools rather than 20 schools. Am I right or wrong? That would be the case. And for that reason, with regard to the ACIDI schools, we have now upped the final amount to 20%. We've suggested to the provinces, some provinces are indeed implementing it. The result of that is going to be this, that it doesn't make sense for them to step away from a job. They will have to complete it. And we will get our final certificates in time. I thought I'd just clarify that, because that's the basis on which we made the suggestion, and there wasn't any resistance to it, because we didn't even suggest it. We directed, this is what we're going to do, because if you're going to suggest and negotiate, you're not going to succeed with this matter yet. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, DM and DG, I just wanted to address two things that came up in the conversation around the persistence of the what the, basically in response to the presentation that AG made. So the one is about things that persist in terms of the strategic plan. We know that there are emerging issues, and we've actually incorporated, for instance, the issue related to the national assessment framework that the spoke about, but we don't have targets yet. So in the current, in the 2018-19 year, we'll then establish benchmarks so that we can address those targets. We normally, we would, before tabling, have interactions with the AG, so that has been dealt with. We're also, again, as DG mentioned, reconciling past experience and eliminating further recurrence in terms of the APPs going forward. And we have an annexure to the presentation that we'll make available to Secretariat so that you can just see the detail. I think Honorable has spoken about looking at the detail of what's in the APP versus what we're actually saying, that how we've remediated, and all of the things that are mentioned in the AG report we have included in the 2018-19 APP. You'll see as soon as you get hold of the copies. I think the copies are due this afternoon, but they arrived in Cape Town on Monday. So I think it's just a case of distance. Thank you.
Probably distance from our office to your office, Chair. Just one point that you might want to just think about it. I'm not sure whether you were still in the SCOPA meeting when the issue of the conflict of interest was raised in respect of getting departmental officials sitting in the supply chain management committees of implementing agents. We were advised that we must check with National Treasury as well. Our view is that there is no conflict at all. The money comes from the line budget of the department. Ideally, we could be running those projects in the department. Implementing agents are doing this on our behalf. But I thought I must raise it here so that you also think about it. We're still going to check with Treasury. I will discuss it with Eugene. But our view on it is very simple. It's money from the line budget of the department. Officials who are qualified to sit in matters such as this one can be deployed to sit to ensure compliance instead of just going now and again to be reactive, like Honorable Mukoto said. This time to be proactive, to sit right from the beginning up to the end so that when the documents come to us, we know that documents that are coming have complied. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the responses. Honourable members, I think we've got a very good base now to move towards our 2018-19 APPs and our budget review as we are going to be engaging on. And as we have been promised, we are going to be getting those APPs this afternoon, electronically and even in hard copy. I think they're already in Cape Town. Mr. Brown will make sure that you do that for us to prepare more for that. Thank you very much for this discussion. DBE and Office of AG, it has enlightened us and even prepared us more for the upcoming meeting. Honourable members, then it means we've been discussing with Mr. Brown of having rounded the members. The meeting that was supposed to take place on Friday, then it's no more on Friday. Remembering that we still have the outstanding second and third quarter report that we're supposed to take next Tuesday. Let us take it next Tuesday. Then on the 27th, have our two entities with their budgetary review. And then the week after, whether it's after the small break or what, then we'll take it DBE. So it'll be like that. So next week, Tuesday, we're meeting the DBE on the second and third quarter report. We'll be in communication with the two entities on the budgetary review processes. Then we'll consult to emergency and to save and shift the date. Thank you very much, honorable members. Let us adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Some people are the way, the truth, and the life. Sister Troy, let's go. Let's go home.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Llewellyn.
Llewellyn Brown.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.